All right, we're going live in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hi, and welcome to the Technocrat Live. I'm Matt Newhall, your host. This is panel number 4. Hi, guys. Thanks for joining me. I know this is all kind of chaotic and last minute. I appreciate it. So tonight we have John Newell, who's a system administrator, and we have George Portugal, who is a neuroscientist and a maker, and we have Tom Manicki, who is a hacker and open source advocate turned lawyer.
That's right.
So, welcome, and we're gonna have a good time. And a little later, we may have another guest joining us. I'm 90% sure, but I'll announce him when he comes. All right. So first, I just want to say thank you for the subscriptions. Keep them coming. Keep the subs coming. Likes and money are fine, but I really love the subs. If you want to make me happy, you want to give me something for Halloween, because of course, you know, that's what you do on Halloween, right? It's the spirit of giving, right? Okay, anyway, keep the subs coming. I'm going to be at, I just wanted to just do a quick shout out. I'm actually going to be at Dee Schneider's charity ride. I just think it's an awesome charity, so I just wanted to say, if you, sounds like something that might be interesting to you, check it out. It's a worthwhile cause. Melissa's Wish is a worthwhile cause. That would be Sunday, so. I want to go on to the dystopia report. So here's the dystopia report. It won't stop until everyone is obsessed with space crime. Like me. And now you.
Yeah, now me.
I was looking at Steve, but I didn't actually mean Steve. I think we had a fourth wall break there. I don't know. Can we have a fourth wall break on a... So feel free to chime in if any of these news stories interest you. They probably will, because they're ridiculous. Yes, this is real. I have citations for everything. So so I just wanted to say, I had to wait a while. I had a guest on at one point that didn't use their real name. And I know this sounds like almost like unreal. So I'd love to hear what you guys think of this. I have my own thoughts on it. Someone had signed an NDA and they couldn't use their own name in public after they signed their NDA. They work in tech, and I might be lying about the details of the origin a little bit. I'm trying to cover up for them, the civics are absolutely true of this. As far as I know, this is 100% true. I haven't seen the contract. Obviously, it's their freaking job. I can't, I can't ask them to show me that. That's ridiculous.
How did anybody find out about it?
Because I had to change their name to have them on the show. So this is actually a mystery guest. So
it was crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I'm like, what? And the thing that's really that stuff's kind of, the cloak and dagger stuff's kind of fun and makes things interesting. But the problem with this from a tech ethics point of view is, first of all, you can't build a career path of your own or your own social network of your own to get out of your to have a future outside of your current company, which is really not the norm in the industry. Which I'm wondering is if that's even legal, or if I'm just responding to social norms. The other part about it is you can't work on open source if you can't use your own name. I mean, I guess you could use a limited liability company and then use a pseudonym with the company, but at some point it's got to link back to your name to be legally recognized. So you literally can't contribute to open source unless your employer allows you specifically to contribute to a project that they're interested in. So I just wanted to say, don't do it. Read your NDAs. If they say you can't use your own name, just don't even sign
Crazy.
It, man. I don't get it. I'm sure it was documents like this. So
how do you sign the NDA? Did he sign it with a pseudonym?
A very good point. Touché. Good one, John. It's kind of hard to comment on it because it sounds almost unreal, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's almost made up, but I mean, I can't confirm it, but it really seems true, you know.
So over the top. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Netflix, if you haven't heard, I don't know if you guys are Breaking Bad fans, but I am. Breaking Bad is going to have a new movie depicting Jesse after he escaped the compound and Walter died. So check it out. Check out the teasers.
Or so we think.
What?
Or so we think.
Or so we think. Who knows, right? Maybe, right. Yeah, he isn't dead. If there was someone who could fake his own death, effectively, it would have been Walter.
Yeah.
Man, that garage door machine gun thing in the trunk, man, that was... Sorry, spoiler for a five-year-old series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still got to watch it.
Yeah, you still got to watch it. Breaking Bad is worth your time. Yeah, someone else... browbeat me and ridiculed me after I didn't watch it, and then I had to, and then it was awesome. So thanks.
How long did it take you to get through a series? A week?
It was binge. Yeah, it was total binge. It was shameful binge.
That's how it was for me too.
It was health endangering binge. You know, like you might have to, you know, please see your doctor before you watch Breaking Bad, because you know you may need immediate recovery. You may need to go to rehab after just watching the show. Yeah, so, oh, wow. What? Does Steve have a present for us?
Yeah, you got chat.
Wow, look at that. Yeah. We can, if you chat with us and send us questions, we can actually see your questions on a big TV. This is great. Look, don't show us.
Us.
Uh-oh. That's not going to be distracting. All right.
Read it?
Yeah.
It's legible, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
Thanks,
there you go. Yeah, thanks for covering us up. Cover us up, please. That's just,
it's really
do I look all right?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. That's cool. Thanks so much, Steve. I've been asking for that for a while. You finally delivered, man. Yes.
It's been raining. Sorry.
You guys are awesome. Cryptos are down. Cryptocurrencies, I mean by that. So, including Bitcoin. And it also coincidentally in the news, as a completely separate item that has nothing to do with that, cryptos were 10,500 at the beginning of the week, and now they're 8,000. And also, the BACT regulated Bitcoin Futures Exchange opened up this week on Monday. So far, it's been 4 down days. Yay!
Start.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. Must be a coincidence, right? Of course. Anyway. Apparently a police chase ended with a Tesla running out of battery and the cop car pulled over and the guy got away. Yeah, so that was pretty exciting. Apparently, when the policeman lost visual sight of the criminal after he ran his battery out. He's chasing him at 120 miles an hour, which of course
pushes the battery
the hardest of any possible scenario other than towing.
Right.
And the guy got out of sight, crashed his car, and ran away.
Oh, wow.
So I assume that it wasn't registered to him and it was stolen, but they were vague on the details, so I'm not sure what the story is there. So either they know who he is and they know where to find him, or he's probably home free. So technology.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, the Tesla's keeping up with me. Just keep going. Keep going. Eventually he's going to drop off.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the future. Dystopia. So, here's the big story. Quantum supremacy. Do you guys know what quantum supremacy is?
No.
There are a number of press releases that have come out, of stories, not press releases, that have come out about Google apparently was planning to do a press release announcing that they've achieved quantum supremacy. But who knows if they were really going to do that press release, right? So the rumors about the press release. So what quantum supremacy is this idea that you have built a quantum computer that can decrypt encryptions, like encryptions, all of them, solve math problems way faster than previously calculated. And not instantly, but it may as well be instantly.
So you just brute force all of them?
It allows you to brute force. This is the promise of quantum computers.
Okay.
And the quantum supremacy is the case where you can literally just brute force any encryption, you know, in a way that dwarfs non-quantum computers. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is awash with conflicting stories out there. So I found a guy, Scott Aronson, who apparently was the one who coined quantum supremacy, and there's a lot of people talking on his site, and he's saying that, one of the things that could happen with this is that you can kind of spoof quantum supremacy. In other words, you can make it look like you've reached it, but you actually haven't.
Okay.
In other words, like it looks like you can crack through encryption way faster than prescribed. You know, it's kind of like a good example in the physical world, in case I'm being too vague, is safes have numbers, right? They have there's a time, there's a number, 15. And so, like, you can have a 6x15 safe. And that means that each side of the safe takes 15 minutes to drill or cut through, right? So encryption is kind of the same way. There's an expected amount of time, you know. It would take 26 billion years to crack this encryption.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So if it suddenly shrinks down to 82 days, right, you're not safe anymore. Mm-hmm. Right, you know. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about. So it wouldn't be instant, but it would be, you know,
significantly shorter.
Significantly shorter and significantly less safe. So apparently this can be spoofed. I do not entirely understand the method by which it can be spoofed, but the way that you confirm that you have successfully calculated a quantum sum, a quantum algorithm instance, would be statistical analysis. So what you're doing is you're just you're saying, okay, how likely is this the answer? You run it against known quantities, and then you run it against unknown quantities and see how much they differ.
Okay.
And then that's how you compare and say, okay, this is we have successfully broken through this encryption, and it's no longer safe.
Isn't that
anyway.
How Enigma was broken?
What?
Isn't that how Enigma was broken? I mean, I'm just going by what I saw.
I think they got a physical Enigma machine. I think that's how they. Oh no! They did they.
I think they were trying to reverse engineer the.
They were trying to reverse engineer it, decrypt it,
and then one of the shortcuts about it was figuring out common words.
That's right.
So these are common patterns that you're going to hit.
They did. It was
and
no
so,
padding.
Okay, well, let's take that and you know take all the encrypted. All the ciphers that we see, mm-hmm. the encrypted stuff, and we'll compare it against that. Where do we see a pattern that's exactly the same? Okay, here and here and here. So we know that that's this one.
Right.
Work backwards from there.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it turns out.
So I guess you can shortcut it.
Yeah. Essentially, the way that they would organize the things that they would send to the Enigma machine were so organized that organization actually hurt them. Mm-hmm. It made it easier to figure because once they got their hands on some decrypted stuff. He said, okay, well, this is what it looks like when it's decrypted. It always looks like this.
Right.
It's always this paragraph format and these words here and these words here.
Right.
You know, and it's true, yes. That actually makes, when you do that, it makes whatever encryption you're using less safe.
Mm-hmm.
So, it doesn't look like it's rock solid, but yeah, if quantum supremacy was really reached, we've essentially reached a state of no more secrets. So I don't know if do you guys all see Sneakers? So Sneakers is a movie about a bunch of guys who find a black box, and you can plug the black box in and give it a little bit of time, it'll break through any encryption, which of course immediately opens up everything, you know, power plants, air travel, banking, nuclear weapons, military, you name it. Mm. So a lot of people are out there going, you know, it's the end of cryptos, but it's not the end of cryptos, it's the end of everything. You know, it's the end of the world. It's definitely the end of global trade, and it's definitely the end of internet shopping and internet transactions.
So Google was going to announce that they've achieved quantum.
That's the rumor, right? It seems a little off, but it's all over the place. There's a lot of reputable news sources talking about this.
If they were going to announce it, who would have it that wouldn't announce it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
If I had it, I wouldn't.
What is it logical that Google would be like?
I don't know about you.
Right.
Right. Right.
I mean, you have this piece up your sleeve that no one knows you've got.
Exactly.
Why would you publicize that?
Exactly.
I
particularly if you're a government.
Certainly if you're a government. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's a really good point, and I'm really glad we went there. You know, so I wanted to. This is something else I wanted to talk about in another time, but I guess we can talk about it now. You know, so I really think that governments have. I know that governments have cabinets full of zero-day exploits that they don't tell anyone about.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, and because think about it, if you're in military intelligence. You have to have this, because if the other guy has it, and if the other guy has a pile of them, and you have none of them, you can't compete.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as soon as you go to open warfare, you're dead. You know, they're just going to shut all your computers off, and you're not going to be able to retaliate, right? You need to at least be able to retaliate in kind. So it stands to reason that any country that has a big enough government to have a fair amount of computer geeks in a some sort of spooky squad, whether it's a militia or whether it's an official intelligence agency, mm-hmm. or both, or many, many things, that they're going to have piles of zero-day exploits. So I think really we really should be signing a treaty, you know, for this stuff. You know, this is kind of off of the field of quantum, but it kind of applies too. You know, like this is a repeating pattern. It's turned into an arms race, and what do you do with arms races? You have an armistice. You have a treaty where you say, okay, we're not gonna let things escalate anymore. So like a nuclear proliferation treaty, a proliferation treaty.
Yeah.
But for zero day exploits, where okay, we're only allowed to have 6 or 10, and then we have to report them, right? Because I mean,
the problem with
you know what I'm saying?
Unlike satellite imagery, where you can see that there's nuclear silos here and here and here and here.
Right.
You don't know how many zero-day exploits. I mean, I could have them on a flash drive in my pocket.
Yeah.
Well, for sure. For sure, we know that they've had at least, I don't know, 10 or 12 or so at the same time,
mm-hmm.
because that's how many were in Stuxnet.
Yeah.
And we know Stuxnet was a government operation now,
right.
for sure. So, I mean, for sure, the biggest government or the alliance of the biggest governments had 12 at one point. Okay. You know, I think it's more than that. I think it's probably a lot more than that. You know, and this is like, the problem is that...
We'll look on Patch Tuesday.
Just because, you know, they may have them, right? They may keep them very, very safe, and no one else can get them, and they only use them when they absolutely have to, or if at all,
yeah.
right? But, at the same time, the fact that they're out there is just one clever algorithm away from somebody finding 3/4 of them all at once.
Yeah.
And creating total global chaos.
Mm.
So, you know, just because... they had a bunch of very smart guys on working on it. Doesn't mean there isn't also a very smart guy who is ill intent.
Yeah.
Who's working on it too.
Right.
Right. So this is the, you know, like, yes, it's reasonable to have a standing army, but do you want it to be the size of an entire country? You know, at what point does, you know, it become too much?
I think the problem with something like an armistice, like you were saying, is that involves governments. Yes, the governments can all agree, but like you said, there could be a guy in his garage hacking away at it.
Right.
He finds the right he finds the right algorithm.
Yeah,
guess what?
Verifying it,
doesn't
enforcing
matter.
It is
yeah.
possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
It seems really hard to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in fairness, same thing for chemical weapons.
I mean,
you know,
true.
You know, especially now. I mean, maybe 75 years ago, you know, after 100 years ago, after World War I,
yeah.
You know, yeah, it was a lot easier because you need a big ass factory to. You don't need that anymore.
Gas or whatever.
You could build chemical weapons in a closet now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you might kill yourself, but you know, and that's karma. But you know, we can't count on karma for everything. Karma can't do everything. So, you know, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so I hope you guys see what I'm saying. I don't know if you agree, but yeah. So quantum supremacy. It's not just about cryptos. If you hear about quantum supremacy and your first thought is my Bitcoin, you don't get it. this is a bigger problem. That's the last thing they're going to go after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch sneakers again. Let's see. Okay, so there's a developer named Vargo who apparently pulled a Ruby library. And the reason he pulled it, he was the developer and he was maintaining it and everybody was getting it from him and he was the source, was because ICE was heavily using this library for some of their code for the law enforcement operations, the immigration organization. So, brought up lots of interesting questions. He didn't just pull it for them, because you can't do that, because that's not how open source works. So I would, you know, humbly suggest you go to opensource.org and check it out and look at Raymond's requirements and the other guys from opensource.org's requirements for what an open source license is. But basically says you can't control what someone's use case is. You can't control their intent, you know.
Right.
If Kim Jong Il? Is it Il or Un?
Un.
Kim Jong-un wants to use something, and you know, and also the Red Cross wants to use something. It doesn't really matter. You can't control it, or it's not open source. That said, you don't have to help. You can just I'm pulling my support. The code's still out there because it's under the license, so you can't retract the license. The copies that have already been distributed are distributed. They're under that license, and they never will go away. But now there's no support. There's no patches. There's no bug fixes.
Right.
Right. And now a new developer is going to have to step up and take control of this thing. So, any thoughts on this or?
So his goal is to make
his goal is to deny it to ICE, but he's of course other people are using it too, so they're going to be denied as well.
I do have thoughts on it, but you know, I'm about to go into political because my line of work does intersect with ICE, and I don't know if I want to go there.
Right. So well, apparently they it's used in an organizational capacity, you know, like so that they can move data around about what they're doing where and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, apparently this does hurt them.
Okay.
There's been confirmation, either at least indirectly, that this is, you know, this is like crap again. We need this code.
Does it hurt them today?
It doesn't hurt them today, right?
Right. It hurts them eventually.
Yeah.
It hurts them eventually, right? Sooner or later, somebody will find an exploit.
It hurts
and then
them
they get hurt.
When somebody finds a 0 day on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they have to...
The clock's ticking. So on the one hand, it could just make some other developer famous. Someone might not give a damn. Someone may be like an independent or kind of apolitical and say, I don't care. I'm going to take this over.
Yeah, they just make a fork of it and...
Fork this popular library. Now I'm in charge of it. Also, it could, they could do it as a political hit. They could be politically motivated and be like, yes, now I'm going to hurt him. I'm going to learn this library, even though I didn't care about it before, just to get this guy. And I mean, that probably will happen once or twice or three times, but if this keeps happening at some point, that won't work anymore. Right? The amount of people who are politically motivated and also expert coders is limited.
Yeah.
Right? At some point, you'll hit a wall, and there's, you know, like, that will... So at that point, that won't work anymore. But there is a decent pool of independent people who are just like, I don't really care. I just want my name to be bigger on GitHub so I get better job offers.
Right.
Yeah. Because that would be the end result of taking control of a fork of something like this. So, I'm not against it. I think this is... he was smart in his use. Clearly he's going to suffer. He's suffering for something he cares about. I think this is very similar to Kaepernick putting his knee down, which I don't necessarily agree or disagree with. To me, it just looked like a protest. This is the code version of that.
Yeah. Right.
So, okay, it's his choice.
That is his, yeah.
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 And good for him. Okay. So yeah, dystopia, baby. wait till it's like a kernel module. You need to use your computer that you don't even know is running Linux and it doesn't work anymore. So, how many people saw the Boston Dynamics parkour video of the robot?
No, but that sounds cool.
There's a new one.
Oh, there is a new one. Okay.
There's a new one that came out 2 days ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, and actually, this isn't even the big Boston Dynamics news. So, now there's one where it's doing backflips.
Nice.
So it's running, it's jumping, and it's flipping.
Wow.
Yeah, it could literally flip in place and do like parkour-like movements. So they've actually gotten there.
So you saw the video. I know the prior models that were all connected to like these big wires and power supplies. Is it all independent now, or is it still kind of
tethered?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all still tethered.
Okay.
But I'm not sure exactly what kind of motor setup they use. If they just use hydraulics with primary driving motors, or if they actually use motors for their movements. I'm imagining it's probably a combination, right? But there is that technology that just came out from that company in Texas where they figured out a new motor type that uses half the battery.
Oh, wow.
So that might be possible for them to switch to battery for a reasonable amount of time.
That's crazy.
So we might have robots that are definitively more agile than 99.99% of the people out there.
So
if you think you're going to fist fight a robot and win, I mean, you really weren't before, right? Because you can just punch through your skull. You know, typically the hydraulics are way stronger than our muscles. But now it can do it and you don't even see it coming. It can Bruce Lee you. So,
How big are these robots?
Well, that case, the robot is the size of a human being.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, but they have a variety of robots. Which brings me to my next story, which I almost certain you guys have not heard, because when I saw it, I said, what the shit? So this is a what the shit dystopia report moment. Boston Dynamics is now selling, for the price of a car, their robot Spot.
Wow.
So if you're not familiar with their robot Spot, they did a Black Mirror of which Spot was the star. Spot was a total nightmare for some post-apocalyptic humans just trying to survive. and they accidentally activated a spot that had some sort of weapon system attached to it that proceeded to hunt them all down and kill them. Sorry, it's old. I know I spoiled it, but yeah. It is absolutely terrifying in a legit real-world way. It is the size of a dog, roughly, and moves like a dog.
Okay.
But with whatever artificial intelligence, and it is definitely battery-operated and can run for quite a while.
Right.
So in that show where they used it, they had it power down and solar charge. I have no idea what the actual charge requirements are or how long it can run for,
mm-hmm.
but definitely long enough to deliver a weapon to you.
Nice.
Bullets first.
But this one isn't weaponized.
Yeah, we could. This one, yeah, the one they're selling is not weaponized, but it is programmable, and it, you know, has a USB slot in its butt, so you could.
I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really its butt, but that's kind of funny. I think it was its butt, actually. Anyway, so you can plug it in. Yeah. You can plug in an accessory, which could include a servo, which could pull a trigger on a gun or whatever. Sure. So you could theoretically weaponize this effectively and fairly easily.
Okay.
And you can just buy it. You can just go on their website and buy it. Contact their sales department, and they give you a price, which they say is the price of a car. Which car, I guess, matters.
Mm. Sure.
But, you know, yes, you could buy a Boston Dynamics Hellhound and stick it on your neighbors. Lovely.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. So, on that note, the FCC is attempting to allow further media consolidation, and the Third Circuit Court blocked them. So, all I got to say is awesome.
Yeah.
Really good news. I don't want to see the media companies be even bigger.
Right.
I'm not really sure what the FCC is thinking here. More importantly, you know, I mean, so I know we were talking about politics before. There's really no way to say this without talking about a single personality. The FCC answers to the president. If the president is complaining about fake news, why doesn't he just tell the FCC to break the media companies up? I mean, I don't want to be Captain Obvious, but what? I don't really, like... I think he might be right. Okay, what's the logical course of action? Call the FCC. Okay, these media companies are too big. Let's break them up. Okay. So who's this guy answering to then? If he's trying to make them bigger? What? I had to read this story three times to make sure I was understanding. I'm like, is this real?
Yeah.
What? Okay. Anyway, I just think I've complained about this before in the show. The FCC not breaking the media company up. I would like to see them a lot more localized. I'd like to see a lot. Really, it should be half of it should be state or smaller.
Yeah, more diverse. Yeah.
Right, because the more competition you have, the harder it is to synchronize, to have synchronized stories. There's a few videos out there on the net, look them up, of news organizations all saying exactly the same thing in tandem, which is horrifying and not the point.
Yeah.
So, anyway. So, I also found out that the head of the Lytx Foundation apparently is predicting that edge computers are going to make a comeback by 2025. So, if you don't know what edge computers are, you probably know at this point, have some vague idea what cloud computing is. Edge computing is local computing, where you're doing your computation in a server room, someplace locally that you either can, a property you control or is physically near you. So, very interesting, because of course we've heard nothing but cloud for the past decade.
Yeah.
So, you know, why would he predict this? I mean, this is like Linux Foundation is a really important organization that, you know, battens patent trolls and, you know, fights baddies. It's a weird, it's out of character. It's a big risk to go out there and say something like this. So, this is all the stuff you missed when you were you know, listening to the buzz like, that's constantly going on out there. So, and we call it the Dystopia Report. Yeah. So, all right. So let's start with the questions. So we're going to get another panelist in a little while, like I said, but we'll have to fill him in, I guess. Be merciful when he comes. You guys may not know the answers to all these questions. Some of these, at least a couple questions are tailored to each of you so that, you know, everybody's got something that's easy for them. Well, not really easy, but feel free to just skip it if you want. So, and just shout out in whatever order you want. That's okay. You guys are very polite, so I'm worried you're not going to do that. Drink more. I need you to be more rowdy. do you guys know what software as a service is, or SaaS?
I do not.
He probably knows. So, software as a service is basically where you're just getting, you're getting your end game result without actually setting any servers or operating systems or doing any patching. Essentially, you're just writing code and saving it onto someone else's server, and then it's just a bunch of scripts and URLs and your APIs, and that's how you're interacting with your software. So essentially, you're just interacting with web pages. And so you're just programming, you get web page results, they may interact with other web page results somewhere else, and that's just provided to you on an ongoing basis, and that's software as a service. So probably the most popular one right now is Lambda, because Lambda's Amazon's, and Amazon owns the cloud, more or less. So Lambda's the big one. So I just use this as an example, but this could be to any software as a service. So when you have a library like that, like the one that was abandoned here, regardless of whether Varga was right or wrong, when you have a library like that, your business is depending on it, and there's no replacement. Do you have? Can you have a reasonable expectation for software as a service provider to start to maintain that library at least until such time as you can get off of it and find a replacement?
Is it a reasonable expectation?
Yeah, is it a Yeah, I mean, is it a reasonable
expectation?
Okay. Two things, right? One is, what can we expect society to demand pressure-wise, IT bosses and such, and programmers, and whoever's paying them. And also, what contractually are they obligated to do? Because when you have a system, right, in this case it was a Ruby library, right, I might be able to use a Python library. If I controlled the system, I could probably write a glue script that sits on the underlying system of an actual platform as a service with a server running.
Okay.
Right? So, and I could use an intermediate script to glue the two together to get the functionality I need. Mm-hmm. If I'm using software as a service, I can't do that. I need that library. That may be the only library that does what it does the way it does it. Mm-hmm. And then someone just yanked it, is that reasonable for people to demand this in future contracts with software as a service providers if it isn't in there already? Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I would definitely think
it's reasonable for them to ask.
Well, certainly it's reasonable to ask, right?
But considering that it's the Microsoft, the Google, the Amazon, who's actually providing the software and the services, they're the ones writing the contract.
Right.
They're the ones writing the words. You're signing it.
They just hand you a EULA and,
right.
And you go, click.
You pay your money for the month, you get your services for 30 to 31 days. Right?
And that's it.
And I don't think they're going to write in any obligation on themselves to maintain services beyond what they've deemed end of support.
Right.
Microsoft has canceled products, and they'll announce an end of life and an end of support date.
So I would argue that Microsoft's usually responding to market and societal pressure. Mm-hmm. So, they don't just do it willy-nilly. The right reason they're still around is because they kind of are responding to customers and to market pricing to some degree.
They have to maintain their audience. Mm-hmm. But
I think if you're talking about something that doesn't have an audience or a small audience, then I could totally see them just being like,
yeah,
see you later.
There's a ton of scientists out there using small to moderate amounts of code.
Yeah.
That is very specialized, has a very tiny user base.
Yes.
And it may be important, but there's no, we have no way to gauge its importance. It's just some script some dude wrote.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's entirely, I know I've used things like that.
Yeah, there's a ton of those things. So.
Yeah.
Particularly in genetics, where I have the most experience, but also in physics, I've seen it too. Mm-hmm. There's big programs that everybody uses, and then there's the little glue things, and everybody's looking for an edge. Everybody wants to process or compile or organize faster than the other guys, so they write their own special program.
Right.
And they may depend on a library like this, and what happens in that case? So I'll give you guys another example. Maybe it'll liven up the conversation. Do you know the story of Hans Reiser? So yeah, he knows. He knows the story. So Hans Reiser was the leading file system developer on Linux.
Okay.
And Hans Reiser had a mail order bride who he decided he had had enough with and killed her and hit her body. And then he got caught and then he went to jail.
Wow.
And then all these people are running his file system for basically this, you know, criminal.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and of course, the other developers who were part of the team took over, but it slowly started fading away.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you people, it was the candidate to become the Linux file system.
Wow.
Right? It was like the best one at the time. It was the best journaling file system before Linux had a journaling file system. And so there was a lot of contention over that for a while. And of course, I'm sure there were contracts that included RiserFS as part of the wording. So I'm kind of curious, like, you know, what do you do when you have a generic boilerplate kind of open source contract that kind of just gives users right to get the code, but you're also paying a service provider, which isn't really providing any services,
mm-hmm.
right? They're just, you know, other than uptime, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it's a warning to this Vargo thing, and Hans and the Reiser thing. I think they're warnings about software as a service. I mean, I don't know. Am I off my base here? I think that to me that feels risky because, you know, if you can't run glue scripts between different programming environments, you can't control the whole system. It's going to be harder to glue things together, and you may not be able to. The odds of finding a work-alike go way down.
Yeah,
there's probably an equivalent to whatever Ruby library does. I think it was. I don't remember what the name
was. That's actually what I was going to mention. Is if somebody's supposed to provide ongoing support,
mm-hmm.
let's say you have a program you're running it at Amazon. And this guy pulls his Ruby library.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that Amazon's on the hook to support the Ruby library? And if so,
that's what I'm saying.
You've now shortcutted this guy's ability to cut support for his library.
Yes, you totally get it. That is the question I'm asking. I don't know the answer. So, I mean, I feel like if they can't do that, what are they doing?
I think he's free to say that's it. I'm done with this library because somebody.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, someone he really doesn't like is getting screwed by his actions. And good, you know, he's probably happy about that. But there's other people who are just not involved. They're like, I needed that.
Right, well, look at
Bring
Java.
It back, please.
Look at Oracle with Java.
Yeah.
Right? Java.
Oh, yeah. Oracle and Java is the
suddenly, we got to pay, what is it, $9, $19, whatever, per workstation in order to run Java.
Wow.
Right.
I didn't know about that. That's crazy.
Right.
This was free. This was given away free. I can understand if
there's an open version, OpenJDK. So.
Okay. Right.
And Amazon has said that they're making an open version of it that'll be freely available.
Mm-hmm.
I think Red Hat was signed on to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
But Amazon just decided, okay, we're going to charge for everything now.
Right.
I could see if they jumped in and said, okay, just the JDK, so that only developers, you want to develop in our language, fine, here, pay some fee.
Right.
But if you want to run it, well, doesn't it support? You need to run the JRE in order to be able to run Java programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of stupid to say, well, now you got to pay in order to be able to run the program that you've been running all these years
for free.
For free.
Right. Right.
And
yeah.
Doesn't it discourage development on their platform?
I mean, maybe the need here is for some kind of like software insurance. I mean, it sounds like really
yeah.
like oh, this is people. So I'm sure somebody watching around. I was like, oh, this is so boring. Software insurance, really? But you know what? I mean, you could be completely screwed. Your entire business model might just go down the drain
because you're
like
heavily
happens.
Dependent on something that yeah.
Well, you know whether Ellison needs a new yacht, whether somebody has a political snit fit, or whether somebody murders their wife, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The software's not there anymore, and you have a service contract that depends partly on that software. You would never have signed it if the software wasn't there. So like I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is a big like drive a truck through a hole in law. You know, and I mean, you could fill it with an insurance company, but really, I think it, I don't know, should it be an insurance company or should it be law? Which one should it be?
Hmm.
You've been very quiet. You can have it. You can say this is my opinion as a lawyer. Yes.
So if you have a, you don't have an opinion, huh?
When I have one, I will be happy to share.
Okay.
It's tough, right? I'm very flattered that I feel like I stumped you.
So. A little bit. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
all right. Good.
My wheels are turning though.
We're right. Right. So I mean, you know, like it's a legal question, but at the same time, I'm also asking from an ethical point of view. So that's not always so easy to answer, right?
No.
You know, what's right and wrong. You know, if I, you know, the conditions under which I agree to this are not, don't exist anymore. Well, sucks for you. You know, like, I mean, traditionally, people would say, well, you're a sucker, sucks for you, you know. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, how fast does the tech world need to be changing for us to go, okay, this is a problem now?
Yeah, that needs to be addressed. And
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the rate of change should be a factor in that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the rate of change is not only faster than ever, but growing.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Well, maybe that's why things have gotten much smaller. People are dependent upon smaller and smaller libraries that interact with each other, mm-hmm. and microservices,
and such. So limiting the damage.
Right. So now when one piece goes on, you know, it's out of support, well, okay, maybe I can get a small team of developers and build something myself.
Yeah. Okay. So you can just pull it in-house if it's really that important to you.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I like that. That's a good, insight. Okay. Have I beaten this horse to death enough? Okay.
I think we're good.
I feel like I beat it to death. So, here's a question that, like, might be tough for you guys to answer. I'm sure John can answer it. We'll have an opinion on it for sure, but, you know, you guys can answer too if you want. So now that we know what Edge is, we know what cloud is, what do you prefer? Edge, cloud, or a hybrid?
Hybrid server infrastructure, no doubt.
Really?
Next question. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Why?
Just kidding.
No. Nice. I like it. Definitive.
Yes. Well, why do I like hybrid?
Yeah.
Well, if one portion fails, you always got the alternative, and with the alternative fails, you always got the opposite side. So, I mean, it was kind of like, if I was to make a comparison to file sharing, right? You started off with Napster, right? Or something similar. Napster was a centralized computer system. The indexing was all centralized, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had to do the search of the index. You take away the indexing server, and the network dies.
Mm-hmm.
Then you decentralize the indexing. Everybody does their little part to index the network, and you combine that, and then you have that. But then that has its own, which is probably similar to cloud. I know if I'm getting a little technically like off track, just pull me back in.
No, you're fine.
Yeah. So if then it was purely decentralized, but then it was like, well, purely decentralized didn't quite work either because, you know, what happened? Because you still needed the gateway to the network, right?
Right. So in case you missed Tom's episode, he's got a background with peer-to-peer systems.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think I see what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
This is like kind of like the same thing over again that we had with the peer-to-peer system.
Right.
You know, and at first it was too centralized, and then it was too decentralized.
That happy medium.
Became impractical, right? So, yeah, where you have some control, you can rein it in when you need to, mm-hmm. but also elements of both.
Yes.
Right. Okay, I like it. And that way a singularity doesn't run away from you and take over the internet. Again. All right, so how about you guys? What do you think?
Edge for me.
Edge for you?
I like having a job.
Yeah,
right. You know what? For me, I like hybrid, and I completely appreciate the advantages of cloud in efficiency, but Edge is I'm paranoid. I want control over it, you know? I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that I can't, you know, there can't suddenly be some interstate commerce kind of trade disagreement. And even if I'm in the right, who knows how many years of legal blah, blah, blah I'm going to have to go through before my stuff's back online. And how much business am I going to lose? I mean, you know, how many millions of dollars does Wall Street lose a minute when trading systems are down?
Sure.
You know, so, I mean, you know, why should I expect anything less for myself? So...
I think I'm in the hybrid camp too. I like having control of my own stuff. I'm not comfortable with fully just throwing everything onto a cloud and having nothing physically in my control.
Right.
I want to have it both ways. And like you said, there's the redundancy is nice. Like, when one thing goes down, you've got the other. It's pretty unlikely that both of them are going to go down simultaneously, or at least one would hope.
Right.
Yeah, that's my two cents.
So are the questions tougher on the panel than they were when I did the in-person interviews? Well, you can't chime in on that yet.
Yeah.
Was this tougher than when I was doing...
For sure.
This is a little tougher. So, I mean, I realize this is not your specialty, but we're going to go fully...
Sure.
You guys have seen the questions, so you know what's coming. all right. So originally I was going to have a maker on here, but I love making stuff, so I'm just doing this question for myself.
Sure.
Feel free to chime in. I'll answer it last. You know, I tend to taint everyone's answers when I jump in there. Okay. So, no limits on time or resources, and any skill set is possible. What would you want to become a specialist maker in? What would you really want? What would you be your maker project? What would you build? You know, unlimited time, unlimited resources. You can buy whatever materials.
Yeah.
You can do whatever training you want, and but you have to build it yourself, or with maybe some help. But you're still there, hands on.
Yeah.
What are you building?
I've definitely given this a lot of thought. I mean, apart from the show.
Right.
Yeah. So as you know from my show last week, like my passion, my hobby is doing, repairs of retro tech, old video games and that kind of thing. And so I love that stuff, but what I'd like to do is...
Robots that say, I am a robot, bleep, bloop, blop.
No, not that.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody
loves those.
So, yeah.
But the old video games are very much the same vibe.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is, my training is in neuroscience. It's not in engineering. It's not in electronics. That's all self-taught. Mm. But I'd like to learn how to make my own computer, like make an 8-bit or 16-bit PC that I or something that I designed myself from the ground up. That would kick ass. I'd love that.
Wow, that'd be great.
Yeah,
it would be completely unrealistic to go under an endeavor like that for a 32-bit computer. It would just be too complex.
But
it's totally feasible for 8-bit. I know guys who do it. So.
I know how to repair those things well, but it would be nice to learn more about like PCB design and how to, take off the shelf parts, because there's plenty of them, and put together something that's an 8-bit or 16-bit machine. Figure out how to develop an operating kernel for it. That'd be awesome.
Wow.
I'd love that.
Cool. Good answer. So how about you guys? What would you do? If you could be a maker, unlimited resources, unlimited training, time, whatever, everything's available to you. You are a prince.
I have no idea. I spend so much time just fixing things around the house that, kids break something, wife breaks something.
Nice.
I don't know. I'd probably want to learn.
You'd want to just build a new house, and then you would have to break, fix everything.
There
all
you
the
go.
Time. Yeah, okay.
Now if I can make it out of Legos, that'd be cool.
Hey, what's
here.
Up? You made it.
Hey.
Please join the panel.
Hey!
So, what's going on? Norm! Hey! Cheers!
Sorry. Blew it.
Yeah.
So, everybody, Austin Andrews, thank you so much for joining us last minute. You are amazing for coming in here and joining us on our panel.
Right.
Thanks a lot. So, unfortunately, you missed the Dystopia report, which is...
You're kidding me. You talked about the dystopias.
No. We talked about... Well, that's my news. That's what I call the news.
Oh, okay. That's the news segment.
Yeah, but...
I knew that. I watched the show, yeah.
So we've gone through only a couple of questions. So we've got plenty of... Plenty left to go. I'll repost the question I just posted. And we've got one answer so far. So I'm still waiting on... two answers so far, so I'm still waiting on you and Tom. So,
okay, good.
and by the way, this is John and this is George.
Hey.
What's going on, man?
Good to meet you.
So, and you don't have to be the first answer. You can answer, you can skip anything you want, you can answer anything you want.
Oh, I got an answer for you.
Oh, okay. So, Austin's a philosopher, so there's kind of nothing you can't answer, right? I mean, you can answer any question.
Anything
you
got
for
me.
Right, nice. Excellent.
If I can't, I'm leaving.
All right. No, you're not. No, we need you, please.
Listen,
we need pure philosophy.
I have an answer for you.
All right. Okay, cool.
There you go.
So, no time, no limits on resources or time.
All right.
You can learn any skill set you want.
All right.
What maker project would you pursue?
Like, as in, like, me making something?
You making something.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, you're a prince. You know, the king has granted you carte blanche. You can have any, people can help you, but you have to be hands-on with it.
It's a blank check.
It's a blank check.
But only for me.
But only for you, and you can build anything you can build anything you want. What's your ultimate maker project?
Anything you want? Oh, okay. Well, I think it would be awesome to create something that, essentially, like, something that, like, because, you know, there's a lot of barriers to entry for, like, things, especially, like, things like finance.
Okay.
I think, and, things like energy for a lot of people in, like, you know, the third world, especially.
Yeah, energy will kill you if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. There's a lot of...
I just was looking up how to... I want to know how everything works.
Yeah.
So I was just looking up refining oil into gasoline and diesel fuel and such. It's insane. I mean, the amount of stuff you need to know. I mean,
yeah.
And if you do it wrong, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
It'll kill you when you're drilling it. It'll kill you when you're refining it.
Absolutely.
It'll kill you when you're transporting it. So, yeah, you got to kind of know your stuff.
Yeah. And then, like, you could do everything right, and then the waste, if you don't know how to handle the waste, then...
Right.
That'll kill you.
Yep.
But, no, I'd love to create something that... I'll start with this. It's something that, like, completely removes all the barriers to entries for something. Like, whether... Like, I feel as if, for me, it would be, like, definitely, the world of finance, maybe.
Right.
Like totally democratizing the way that people are able to earn money and exchange money. That would be really cool. Like, if it could be something that just couldn't... Like, is completely divorced of any real...
Are you Satoshi Nakamoto?
Wait, what?
The guy who wrote Bitcoin. He's anonymous.
Oh, well, yeah. No, I would love to be able to properly, completely democratize the way that people are able to do things like energy and finance or food.
Okay. So there is, I don't remember the name of it right now, but there is a cryptocurrency that has, but it's part of the protocol, the ability to have localized exchanges anywhere as nodes on the network.
Yeah.
So that's kind of heading in that direction. So you can set up contracts and futures and all that stuff. All cryptocurrencies have that stuff built, have hooks for that stuff built into them, because Bitcoin had the hooks.
Yeah.
But most of them don't. It's not that mature. But yeah, he's rewriting a one where you can do, like, futures and derivatives and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd have, you know, you basically would have a financial center on your desktop. So.
But yeah, I'd love to. That's what I'd love.
Sounds like you need to spend more time with cryptos, man.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Stocks,
he's
fine.
Yeah. Well, no, that's. But you know what? It's a lifetime. You know, the hardest part is there's two things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have the learning how to do it, and then you have this internal, the self journey, where you have to stop yourself from, like, you know which way the trade's going, but it's not going there yet, and you can't.
Jeez,
like,
we're
speaking
about
from experience.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't panic. You have to be resolute in your philosophy, your approach.
We're talking about trades now?
What?
I'm asking, are we talking about trades now? Because I got some stuff to say about that, definitely.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, like, that's all correct, obviously. Like, handling your anxiety.
Right.
And doing any kind of trade
it's
is
huge.
Very important.
Sit tight and be right.
But, yeah, but, like, one thing you got to really understand is that what the market really is, that it's people agreeing on value. It's like it's communication, really. I mean, that's not what I'm gathering from it anyway.
Right.
But and that's why you'll see, like, some minute event will just radically, like, throw it all, like, you know, throw a hammer in the normal free-flowing machine, and then things, like, start going crazier. You know, values of different IPOs will just go tank completely or go, skyrocket. And it could be for a completely, seemingly arbitrary reason.
Yeah.
But, like... Well, that's really what you need to understand. It's people agreeing on the value of things like commodities and services.
Right,
and,
right. So this is, I got an interesting one for you.
Yeah.
Going back to this.
Oh boy.
And it comes right back to the root of the show.
Oh,
so do you know who the original technocrats were?
Who?
Wall Streeters. The first people to call themselves technocrats were people working on Wall Street, because they were the only ones who understood the financial instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of interesting. What?
Does that make a technocrat? Would it be like the church in, like, old...
Well, I would argue that church is a technocracy, that theocracy is a specialized variant of technocracy, that it doesn't cover all possible cases, but it is a case. But the first time people actually called themselves technocrats was in the 30s in Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Because they had the financial devices had gotten so complex, nobody understood them. So it's cool that you went to the most complex thing. You said, well, if I'm going to study something, I'm going to do the thing that was originally the original barrier to entry in the modern world.
Exactly. Oh, I mean, listen, like, if you're... This is, I mean, because we're being absolutely technical about it. We do live in the postmodern world. It's crazy how into the stratosphere things have really gotten in terms of, like, financial exchange. And you got people who can become, like, billionaires over the course of several hours or several years learning how to just maneuver the intricacies of the world of trading.
Well, it's very easy to become a billionaire if you start off with $999 million.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're starting off from a dollar, you're going to be there a while.
No, I'm not saying that it's necessarily easy.
Right.
But I'm saying that if you have the mechanisms, like, down pretty much pat in terms of how they work and, like, how they'll probably proceed in the future, then you really can participate and come out of it being a lot better off than you previously were.
That is the weirdest maker answer I've ever heard. So, but not bad. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Any input?
What did you say? I'm sorry.
I actually haven't given my answer yet.
Okay, cool.
So if I had unlimited time, unlimited resources, any skill set as possible, what would I build?
Yes.
I'm building a spaceship to Alpha Centauri.
Nice!
Hell yeah.
Because if I understand the physics correctly, if I want to approach anywhere as near the speed of light, I'm going to need unlimited energy.
Right.
So
there you go.
Right.
You go.
That was my second answer.
There we go.
Don't steal the other people's answers.
No, I'm not, dude.
No, that was cool.
I just want to make you happy. Go
that's
on.
That's a very good answer. A good answer. I like that. So, so essentially, you just do what every major new money tech magnet is doing.
I could say that. Yeah.
That's a nice way of saying that you're not special, man.
No. Because you know what? He just doesn't want to deal with space crime. You know.
No. Yeah.
You
no.
Know? If it's a one-way street, that's like the new thing here on the Technocrat Live. It's all about space crime.
No, it's fine because at least you know what's there. You know.
What?
Yeah.
Like you know where I'm. Know where I'm going.
How old do you have to be though?
To drink in space.
To drink in space? I don't know. You can be whatever age you want. What is it? Come and get me.
Wait, hold on. Right. I have an answer. Okay, so basically, I think the international ruling is that if you're, I think like a mile out at sea, you assume the legal boundaries of whatever flag you're flying under.
Right.
No, hold on. You can easily transfer it. You can easily transfer it. So just all you need to do is just fly the flag of whatever you want. It could be a newly registered country. Then. Whatever.
I would pay $100 to see you get pulled over and have this conversation with the cop pulling you over. Because this would be spectacular.
Be awesome.
And you know, you wouldn't be wrong. You wouldn't be wrong. The cops love it when you're smarter than them. All right. So let's see. How would you articulate? And this is anybody can answer this question. Just jump in there when you have an answer. How would you articulate a measure? Can you articulate what a measure of destructive level of gullibility in another adult is? Mm. In other words, how do you say that person's too gullible for? They're gullible to the point of being destructive.
Jesus. Okay.
What a loaded question.
Well, no, I know. I can immediately apply this.
But okay, go for it.
No, well, okay. So there's a bit of a debate on obviously, like you know, things like how destructive is what somebody says, you know,
right.
And okay, so there was this. They recently came up with it, and it wasn't really recently, but they came up with this sort of. It was like this news story about this kid who got famous for coming out of the radicalization pipeline of YouTube, about how he went through like these different YouTube personalities and he slowly progressively got into like you know the alt-right who and became slowly radicalized that way and then
just for the record you didn't get the pre-show talk but we try to avoid politics here.
Oh, okay.
We talk civics. That's okay. You can talk anything about politics and Well, I'm using the Shakespearean view of politics, which is personalities. So okay. Try to avoid names.
That's okay. Okay, that's good, because I was gonna.
Internally, I was going there. Internally, I was
going there. Okay.
So you guys totally get what I'm saying.
I'm gonna cut
just
it.
Because, you know, like
no, I got it.
It makes it better, I think.
I'm gonna cut it short then. Basically, like I was hearing these people talk about it, and they were saying like, okay, like listen. And I totally agree with this. Like, okay, listen, those people who kind of just, like, I guess, become deeply radicalized just from people say, like, those are, we gotta just admit to ourselves and wipe our hands of it, those are the stupid people.
Right. People who get radicalized are the stupid people.
Yeah, that's essentially what he's saying. And obviously
that.
He was being somewhat unsophisticated with his speech, but needless to say, those are people who are looking to be in some way, not necessarily lied to, but looking for like some grand narrative to the universe so they don't have to really think about it too hard.
Okay, so maybe people who are radicalized by kind of desperately searching for a grand narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good standard.
Like, I mean, if you think about it, soccer can radicalize somebody.
That's actually more specific standard than my boilerplate, so which I was going to turn to if everyone just gave me blank stares. I do have answers to these questions, just in case everyone's like, what the fuck are you asking these crazy questions for? You know, and that way I can give you my answers.
But, I guess if we could measure how susceptible someone was to just, like, any grand narrative whatsoever.
Right.
I guess it goes into like the realm of ethics.
Well,
there,
you know? I didn't ask necessarily to find out just when they've reached the threshold of danger to other people.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to know.
Okay. Yeah. You're asking like what do we do with them?
There's going to be more.
Okay.
These questions all kind of lead into each other, so you'll see.
Okay.
So. Yeah, that's the reason I stopped it there. So,
in that case I defer to anybody else.
I defer to the panel. Please continue, my fellow technocrats.
Yeah.
So what do you think, guys? Any input?
Yeah, I mean, just going off what Austin said, I mean, you know, sometimes like when you're having a discussion with somebody, and I think the measure is sometimes where you're answering somebody's taking a radical position, and you're trying and you're negotiating that position, and you're saying, okay, so if I present you A, B, and you seem to be hung up on A, B, and C, and you provide an answer for A, B, and C, and you've sufficiently answered A, B, and C, and then all of a sudden, well, and then the response is, forget about A, B, and C. Oh, now I'm going to come up with D, E, and F.
Yeah.
Goalpost moving.
Right. And it's just like, I think when it just becomes an impossible argument, and it's just like, I'm answering every question you have here, or you're addressing
Well, this is the beauty of the court system and being a lawyer, is because you do that shit to a judge, and he'll be like, bailiff.
Right.
Yeah, right. I mean, am I wrong on that? I mean, straight to the bailiff, but yeah.
Maybe not straight to the bailiff.
Right, right.
Like, maybe like.
First, maybe read the court reporter back in, make fun of them a little.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did they say again?
Yeah.
Okay, I just had to hear it a second time. I wasn't sure if that really happened.
This is making court sound like a good time.
It could be, you know, as long as you don't really care about your client, you know, you're good. You know, it's just coast. Whatever happens, happens. We're all going to learn something today. Me especially.
Jesus.
How about you guys? Any input?
I'm just thinking about how you could operationally define this.
Right.
Thinking about it like a scientist. Like
How do you define how do you define gullibility, a danger level of gullibility?
Yeah.
And if you have to narrow it down to topics, on particular topics, that's fine, but it would be best if it was, you know, a general way to kind of go, ooh, too hot, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like there's got to be, and I should kind of know this, because, like, I was telling you last week, my background started in psychology and then moved into neuroscience, and so
right.
I have some. There has to be some kind of way to measure this objectively or somewhat objectively.
Well, there's definitely different kinds of gullibility, for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it depends on what the topic is and when it comes up. I guess the context,
yeah.
Right, does matter. But at the same time, you know, I mean, we've all had a... if you talk to a child, like a young child, and you can immediately tell in 5 minutes if they're way too gullible to be out in the street by themselves.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So there is a standard, even if we aren't articulating it. It's out there.
Yeah.
Right?
There's something we can agree on. When it's extreme, at least, it's easy to agree on.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah.
You said you were a psychologist?
No. I started my career that way and then became a neuroscientist.
Okay. So maybe we can use the... I mean, I think it's been under question for a little bit, like maybe recently, but maybe we can use the big five personality traits to define like a gullible person.
Yeah, or perhaps some kind of subset of that that makes you more vulnerable to it.
Yeah, to immediately adopting things as like higher truths.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think with gullibility too, I mean, you kind of touched on this too, it's, I think... Maybe some people are just globally gullible, but I think there are some people who are super gullible about a very narrow set of topics, and it usually has some connection to some other problem going on in their life.
You think it's like almost like maybe like a comfort food kind of situation where that's their comfort zone and they just don't know how to operate outside of it?
Outside of that, yeah, and they just can't process, yeah, and so they'll just buy into it because they just can't handle
those. So broader inappropriate comfort zones.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I can't. I don't know. I'm struggling
I like that. That's it. And it's separate than the other answers, right? So we got moving the goalposts, you know, broad comfort zones, and desperation for a unified system, or you know, which leads to easy radicalization.
The thing I was talking to one person about this, right? And like it's. Since I guess I am the panel's philosopher, or I don't know if any of you, the rest of you are. But,
are you? Are you really here?
No, but if I were to look at it from a postmodern sort of sense, from the actual body of postmodern thought, the postmodernists reject the idea of grand narratives completely and seek them to be deconstructed almost constantly.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like
so,
that.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, the thing I was trying to tell
people... I argue, therefore I am?
Say?
I argue, therefore I am?
Okay, do you believe that to be an actual, like, thing that is true?
I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there. my role right now is just to keep this going, so,
okay.
You know... Yeah, I was just.
But are you so sure of your role as the person who's keeping it going, or you know?
No. In fact, ideally, I will just go on my phone and play Angry Birds while you guys yell at each other, and Steve breaks out the Nerf weapons, and then everyone's like, "Wow, these people are."
Okay.
So no Angry Birds for me. So no.
I don't think that's a Nerf weapon. But anyway.
No. We cannot use the final armory yet. It's too soon in the episode.
And the escalation hasn't reached critical mass. Okay,
right.
That's fair enough. I'll try not to bring it into the realm of...
Oh, you can bring it.
Shotgun politics.
Shotgun politics.
But
maybe that's gullibility right there. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, what I try to tell people who I guess are very... I can only invoke examples that I really know. But I try to people who try to invoke this... A want for deconstruction of like these sort of higher order principles that they deem to be, say, like harmful.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them, okay, listen. There's actually a word I give to people who are pretty high on the gullibility scale, and it's not stupid. But I just call them civilians. Like they're citizens. They're the like I think Mark used.
And I love you too, random citizen.
I think Mark used the term the cream cheese, which is like the, it's just a regular person, you know. Like
ordinary folks.
Yeah, and
ordinary folks who aren't into the deeper questions.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with being ordinary. It's just that you gotta be able to recognize who you can kind of tell who's kind of ordinary.
I promise I won't be mad at ordinary people who don't necessarily want to look at things more deeply if they're not mad at me for wanting to look at things more deeply, because I've had that too.
I've been
criticized for being a thinker.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we all have.
I think he's got a problem.
I just wonder if there are ordinary people. Or do we really think that there are people that aren't thinkers?
There are definitely people who are not intellectually curious and who shun it.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's actually true.
Well, I think the term they use is... I don't know if this is like a... Well, the term that I know that they've been recently using is neurotypical.
Neurotypical. Yeah.
No, well, that's what the autistic people use to talk about the normies.
No, there you go.
Yeah. There's a lot of autistic spectrum people in that.
Yeah.
Team,
so normies, I guess. Yeah. There are people who I feel genuinely.
Yes, and the audience. Those are the comments, by the way. We have the comments live. Yes.
Awesome.
Yes, I think there are people. I agree. There are people out there that are not intellectually curious. But I don't know if that's a very big population.
Nah.
Some part of me feels like it's not a big population.
Listen,
it's
why
not as big
this,
as we think it is.
Why doesn't this panel like have 60,000 people on it? Come
well,
on.
Actually, yeah. If you go outside right now, there's a huge audience.
Matt doesn't scale. We're
gonna
that's
be passing
why.
The bike. To those
I would totally like Technocrat Fest, like Ozfest. I would do that.
Yeah. Like a lightning round.
Just a giant mosh pit of ideas. You know.
Yeah.
I disagree, sir. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
It depends on which drugs and how much.
I will not bring the Molotovs.
All right. How about you, John? Any input on this? Or
I'd use my quantum supremacy machine that I built in my garage.
Oh, you just... Singularity. Solve this for me.
Ah,
on to lunch. Yes. Yeah. I agree with it. So the answer, the canned answer that I was going to give you guys, if nobody could answer this, was Stockholm Syndrome. That was the clinical answer I could think of that would definitely apply to this. Mm-hmm. Someone with Stockholm Syndrome, you know, regardless of whether it's a real syndrome or what the actual causes are, a person who would be capable of being diagnosed in that space,
yeah
definitely gullible to the point of self-destruction.
Being destructive, yeah.
So,
fair enough.
That would imply context, what your point, which is that context definitely has an effect on it,
yeah.
Right? If your context is extreme, you're going to be less likely thinking about the deep questions and more likely to just go along with what everyone around is doing because it's too much energy to do otherwise or, you know, maybe even it's dangerous not to.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, you do it enough times and you like it, or at least you're pretending to like it, and then you do like it because you pretended too long, or... I mean, we're creatures of habit, right?
Yeah.
You know, just keep doing the same thing over and over and over.
I try to tell people who are, like, extremely hyper-logical or, like, over-rational about
right.
the way that they think that, okay, hey, listen, like, in the end, you're a very special and wonderful person, but in the end...
No.
What
and there's in, star poop. Anyway.
In the end, what poop. You create has to adequately reciprocate with the citizens or else they're not going to like it. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, for those people who are like have these grand social narratives, like, I try to tell them, okay, so, awesome. Is this going to create order that lasts? Because if it doesn't, then all the citizens are going to hang you from the lamppost.
Right, right.
Right.
Well, that's true, you know, from a very selfish point of view. And also, I appreciate chaos, too. I've learned to love the Vikings, and, you know, Loki has a role. You know, once in a while, you got to have, if you inject a little chaos, you get more truth.
Yeah.
Right? Because if everybody just gets used to marching this way and, you know, cutting the loaf this size and... You know, opening the door at this speed and saying this at this time to this person, nobody's thinking about it anymore.
Yeah,
it's just an
absolutely.
Autopilot.
Absolutely.
It's just a zombie movie with less rotting.
I'll tell you, like, when I first got into like things like the day trading and investing, like I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And
yeah, you lost me a lot of money.
Yeah. And
Well done. I appreciate your honesty.
Well, yeah, but...
Everybody loses sometimes.
I ended up losing a lot more as time went on, but, like, I find... Like, it's good when you finally begin to grasp things. But in the beginning, it's pure chaos. You don't know what's going on. Like, you don't know how this thing works.
Right.
And for a lot of people, they're just like... You wouldn't believe how many people who just have no idea... How these things
actually, I would even argue that I don't know why I'm getting back into this, but I would even argue it's not chaos. That when you first go in, this tells that you're a mark, and people are like, "Ah, he doesn't know what he's doing." And specifically, I made this point in my Technocrat cartoon, is that you know, people watch your trades. If you have a big stop loss or a big purchase order, you know, at a particular place. That company that you're trading with, you sign an agreement that says they can use that data however they want, including trading against you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even if, or selling it to someone else who wants to trade against you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's possible. This, I mean, you know, it's the language is huge, so I am probably oversimplifying it, but you get the picture.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, you know, like...
They have their own interests.
They have their own interests, which is taking your money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I try to go a little bit at a time.
Okay, so that was cool.
Thanks, guys.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. So, what do you guys think? Is it ethical to make robots look cute?
So, we've solved, assuming we've solved the uncanny valley situation, like we've moved beyond that, and now we're getting to...
Right, well, we've kind of like gotten a handle, maybe not all the handles, but a handle on gullibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, is it okay to take... to take what's essentially a tin can with a clock inside and make it look cute, cuter than it would naturally be.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How else are you supposed to sell it?
How cute is too cute? You know?
Yeah.
Are we assuming purely metallurgical robots? Are we talking Cylon-type humanoid robots? Are we talking
Mitsubishi 2? Well, that's actually... Has everybody here seen some version of Battlestar Galactica?
Sure.
The new one. Has everyone here seen the new Battlestar Galactica?
Yes.
No.
All right. Well, does everyone remember the old one and how the Cylons looked?
Yes.
You know, ridiculous, menacing, giant, sliding back and forth red eyes. Sorry, I spoiled it. Well, in the newer one, there's also ones that look exactly like people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're dead bang on. You can't, you know. So, in fact, that's one of the plot points is that you can't figure out who's Cylon and who isn't.
Right. Yeah.
So, there's a reason they did that, and they didn't make themselves into giant menacing robots with sliding red eyes.
Yes.
So, you know, when is it too much?
When is it too much?
I don't know. I mean, is it really that different from any other thing that we create that we can make to look cute?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Right? You know? I mean, you put Hello Kitty on anything and it'll sell.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And even though it's maybe completely useless and wasting your money and, you know, counterproductive to any kind of happy life.
Yeah. I mean,
other than that 1 second you look at Hello Kitty, oh, is it cute?
Yeah.
Well, I have no money.
The Teddy Ruxpin.
Right.
What? Sorry, I don't mean to pick on Hello Kitty. Yes, Teddy Ruxpin too.
I gleefully smile.
Well, robots also. Teddy Ruxpin's a little bit creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So robots can get creepy sometimes when they try. They can get creepier than when they look scary than when they try to be cute and fail. So there's that too.
Or when they're jumping around and moonwalking.
Right. Yes. How many people have been completely had the hair on the back of their neck stand up when a children's toy goes off in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
I mean, they make movies about it, right?
Chucky. Yeah, there's Chucky, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's like, what? No. Especially when the battery's dying. Logically, I know what's happening, right? It's a very simple chip that's just outputting the sound, and there's not enough energy to have it run at full speed, but mentally, I'm just like, Satan's in my house. You know, I'm letting the dogs out of the cage. You know, I'm, you know, I got the fireplace poker. You know.
Yeah.
Right. So, what were you gonna say?
Well, I was gonna make a quick joke about the whole put things on Hello Kitty. I was gonna say, like, I smile gleefully for the last few seconds of my life as a Hello Kitty nuke falls on my skin.
Yeah.
Oh,
my dad's
man. Hello.
So cute.
Aw.
Goodbye.
Like, yeah. But
Dr. Strangelove, good job.
No, I was gonna say, hey, listen, I mean, like, let's say robots do become like very widespread. Like, let's say you're running.
It's already happening.
Oh,
so it's going to happen.
No, yeah.
You're not allowed to be in here if you don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah, let's say you're trying to run actually, I have another thing to say about this. That's really interesting. I want to hear you guys' thoughts on after this point. But let's say you're running a hospital. And there's robotic nurses on the market. Would you rather have one that looks like R2-D2 or like one that looks as welcoming and nurse?
Roger Rabbit's girlfriend?
Huh?
Roger Rabbit's girlfriend?
Sure, why not? Well, you know, one that looks cute in the sense that it's very, it seems very welcoming and calming, or one that looks very robotic and unnatural?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's another effect we could talk about, the Florence Nightingale effect. People fall in love with their nurses.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the latter obviously makes sense and certainly would reduce your anxiety and put you at ease, and that all benefits you with healing and all that other crap too. Mm-hmm. It totally makes sense.
Something else though, I saw this one post by someone, and at first it was like on just like a random social media. This
I want my nurse to be a Cylon. at least you are what you are, and I am what I am, and we're good. We're good.
Well, I mean, hey, like maybe one day they'll have like those ones that. Like exude these electromagnetic fields that show you an image of something that you prefer based on your sense of cute preference or whatever. That would be a really interesting thing.
Oh my gosh! Wow. Oh my God, this is where we're going.
Drowned in your own hormones.
walking in and looking at some guy who looks like Lil Wayne. Like, whoa, what are you doing here?
yeah, that's a good point too.
I'm helping. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I saw this one post. Someone was saying how, like, basically, like, I saw these one robotic, like, these robotic sort of quadrupedal robots that were, like, they're being commissioned to the military. Or they're thinking of commissioning them to the military as, like, a contract for we need X amount, whatever. And people were obviously, like, doing the whole internet thing where they say, like, oh, a cute doggo or whatever, It's because it was essentially a dog, I guess. So it was on four legs and it walked like a lion or a dog based on the whatever settings or the way that they had it anatomically built. Mm-hmm. And one person was like, hold on, this is dystopian as hell, because what they're doing is they're putting into your minds this this idea, oh, a cute sort of animal thing, but in reality, these things are going to be used to hunt down.
Yeah.
And then it obviously got a little political. Sure. But these things are going to be used to hurt people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're being brainwashed.
What a cute murder machine!
Yeah, exactly.
Who's a cute murder machine?
Yeah. But it's they're using the classic tells of a creature that is meant to be sort of adorable, I guess.
Is that the Boston Dynamics one?
No. Yeah. So you can buy a Boston. You know the Boston Dynamics dog. You know they have Spot. Yes. So there was a Black Mirror on this. Uh-huh. There was a Black Mirror where Spot was used as the actual robot in the episode where it would hunt people, and it basically hunted everyone down in the episode and killed them. So, like, literally this thing is scary enough that they just have to put the actual robot in a show, and everyone's like, oh my God, that's horrible! You can buy one now. They just put them on sale for the general public. You just call them up, they give you a price, and they'll send it to your house.
Yeah.
And now you have a robotic dog that can murder people.
You can program
it. If you attach a murder device to it.
Well, you can program in any way you possibly can.
Right. And it's, super strong, can pretty much go anywhere, can pretty much climb anything, Battery life, of course, is limited, but, robots can recharge themselves. Why not your robot dog?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really interesting about how you're being essentially convinced that, like, subconsciously, I guess, that
interesting. So this is one of the things I wanted to bring up as an example of this. My example is Freud talking about, exploring and expanding on human psychology. And, I mean, reportedly, and I think it's true, Freud was extremely depressed at the end of his life. Because, of course, what was he watching? He was watching his psychology, which was then turned into marketing by his nephew, Edward Bernays. And Edward Bernays' data, very public data, was snarfed up by Goebbels. And he was using his propaganda to program the Nazis. Uh-huh. You can argue about whether they were programmed or, fooled. I think you can just use the word programmed, into doing what they did. Mm-hmm. You could argue that they were ripe for it because of all the hyperinflation, all the terrible things that happened there before that, but they did it, and Freud had to flee his own monster. Yeah. It's literally like a Frankenstein's monster kind of thing. So, it's human psychology can be really dangerous, if in the wrong hands and if used at full capacity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we're coming on a time when people are a little bit less apologetic about the things they create,
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think people are just going to be generally less apologetic and even implore the sort of rampant use of whatever it is that create for whatever means that you want, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even necessarily think that comes from greed. I think that just comes from, just a like information flow numbness.
Well, for sure. Perfect segue into our next question. Oh. So does anybody else want to chime in on this, or should we keep going? Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, some of that. I found that, like we were talking about before, when people get too radicalized, you know, because they want a unified answer, that's when they tend to do the most damage.
Yeah.
Right? That's when you see a lot of destructive capability. And so the question is, you know, when the truth is destructive or repugnant, you know, do scientists have a responsibility to report it or to skip it? You know, is the truth always a noble goal on its own, or should they be metering out? Like if they discover something terrible,
yeah,
you know, that can be used for evil,
yeah,
you know, do you have a responsibility to report it or not? I mean, you know, of course, the case of that going wrong is, of course, with Hitler and Goebbels and Freud,
right?
You know, and then of course, in sometimes things look terrible, and then because the science went out there, it didn't end up being so terrible after all. Solutions were quickly, you know, conventions. Yeah. You know, I don't want to talk that, you know, you don't want to talk down to people, but you don't want to let, you know, an animal, create a golem you can't control, create an animal that just, you know, ravages everything.
Right.
You know, out of the science.
Yeah, yeah, that's making me think.
Like atomic bombs.
Yeah, Oppenheimer.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, who was instrumental in getting the atom bomb created and deeply regretted it for the rest of his life, and it had huge implications. But in the end, yeah, it was something that wasn't out of control, and a whole system.
I love mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
I mean, as crazy as it sounds, I also hate it too, because I hate nuclear science, but not the bomb. That's not the problem. The problem is the atomic plants with all the first order nuclear materials
waste
that aren't really have any kind of self-reliant control systems.
Right.
So the second everybody, all you have to do is, like, a la a Batman episode, just gas the people in the plant, and it immediately melts down.
Right.
You know, that's Generation 1 GE plants. You know, like, what? You know, like, Generation 4, Generation 5, totally safe, and we won't switch anything because everybody NIMBYs it, so they can't build anything new.
Right.
Which is just complete cognitive dissonance, you know, everyone's out of their minds. But the funny thing is, the thing that, because it was so over-the-top dangerous,
right,
the atomic bomb, everybody had, you know, okay, this is crazy. We can't burn the world to a crisp.
Right, we have to,
you know,
figure out a way to deal with this. Yeah.
The secondary technology, but the bad implementation of the secondary technology is way more dangerous than the actual, you know, nuclear weapons wouldn't kill off humans. It would kill most humans. It would kill most of the planet.
Sure.
It would be terrifying to the ecology, and things would be completely different after.
Right.
But that wouldn't be what killed us. It would be all the nuke plants melting down after everyone was dead. That's what would make the planet uninhabitable.
Having this radioactive half-life for hundreds and hundreds or thousands of years. Or thousands of years.
Because like the radioactive materials after a nuclear blast, they're gone in weeks. You know, if you can just avoid breathing them during the time that they're radioactive, they're gone. Most of the nuclear material is destroyed. It's when it hangs around.
Yeah, the fallout.
Yeah.
That persists for an obscene amount of
generations.
Time. Yeah, yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is that I guess you can make a very almost morbid argument that Oppenheimer's work actually did bring about a kind of peace.
Yeah, well, that's why I love that's mutual assured destruction. That's why
exactly.
I love it.
Yeah,
because it's
Ozzy's got a song. I learned to love the bomb or something. Or I love the bomb. You know,
because it makes it so like we absolutely have to come to some kind of other agreement or like other form of communication lest we obviously destroy the planet.
Right.
Now, I actually, if I can gather my thoughts here for a second, I actually think that the kind of violence that we are capable of is just being completely transferred to something totally different. And while the more physical and apparent violence that we know, like, very well, such as, like, I think in the Battle of Passchendaele in World War I, like, in that single battle, they lost, like, 300,000 people, like, on one side. Mm-hmm. And then the enemy side lost, like, almost half the number, just for, like, this really small stretch of ground. Like, you're not going to really see that anymore. But,
Warfare has changed. And you could actually argue the reason that one of the reasons those world wars broke out, there were lots of reasons, but one of the reasons was new technologies were available. Everyone's exactly. Like, hey, let's give this a try. Maybe we'll win this time.
Yeah. Right.
Woohoo! This is the one, boys, that we're going to win.
The tale of the actual, Henry Maxim, the story of him is actually really interesting, but I guess that's something really separate. But,
Could you pass the wine while you're...
Sure. Who wants it? There you go.
Thank you.
No problem.
I need more wine. Went pretty heavy. Heavy metal.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
But
little science joke.
But I just think that... I can't necessarily remember term, but I think that the lag time in between periods of violence will just... let me just explain out the long way. I was trying to short it out, but I think that when violence does break out, it will be essentially so cataclysmic that it will end us completely. I think that's all that WMD's really achieved.
Yeah.
I think that all it has done is just put a cap on the violence we're capable of, and just basically made it that when it does happen, it'll just be too much for anything to happen. Yeah, exactly.
Does anybody disagree with mutually assured destruction is... You know, a deterrent. I mean, I think
the evidence speaks for itself. It was.
Yeah, I think it's clear.
It is.
History vindicated that position.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, there are some people who definitely do disagree, and some people who would definitely rather.
Well, I mean, I don't love it, right?
Yeah.
I don't love the fact that we can destroy our planet on a whim.
Yeah, would it be preferable to have them, not have them at all? Sure, but that's not, I don't think, realistic to implement. Yeah.
Right. I mean, if we were going to discover something.
No. Yeah. I mean, just to go back to your question again, and something that I was thinking about just now that we didn't talk about, which is that, you kind of phrase it as, what responsibility do scientists have to report it? And to some extent...
Report it to who?
To report to the public or sit on it and not tell anybody.
Yeah,
Tony Stark figures out time travel, right?
He did. Oh.
In Marvel, in the comic book world. But that's what comic books do. They explore ethical questions with fistfights. But, if you discover time travel, do you sit on it? Do you tell other people about it?
Right.
I mean, pretty much, once you start telling people, you are now in the deepest circle of the government, and they're not going to let you out.
You
have lost control of it. You have one decision to make, and once you make it, that's it.
Right. Well, I mean, you kind of got to where I was going here, which is that when you're a scientist, you're not operating in some kind of vacuum. You're not running experiments because you feel like it and because you have some independent pile of cash. It's money that is most likely federally funded, most of it or all of it. And when you get federal money to run experiments, you're obligated to report it primarily, first and foremost, to the government, to the NIH, or to whomever. And so, if you're finding something earth-shattering that could have some kind of crazy implications for society or whatever, it's going to be kind of removed from them anyway, whether they like it or not.
Right.
Unless they just totally subvert everything, falsify their data, and keep it to themselves that way. But that's probably the only exception. I mean, you get what I'm saying? Whether the scientists...
Well, of course, you have legal obligations, for sure.
Yeah.
Right, and they can come and put you in jail. But, I mean, there's also, this is the stuff that the thrillers are made of.
I know.
I don't tell anyone about this. This is terrible. I'm not going to get... I didn't find anything.
The cat will get out of the bag, one way or another. And the thing about science, too, is that
So you're making an anti-security through obscurity argument.
Yeah, it'll come out of the bag one way or another.
Okay.
And even if me as a scientist find something earth-shattering that's potentially explosive to society or whatever, and I decide to keep a lid on it, the way that science works is that enough innovation happens that at some point, it's just a matter of time that someone will discover this. There's lots of...
Somebody else will happen across it.
There's so many instances of this in the history of science where you get five or six guys working independently and they both discover it, but it's only one guy who really gets it out there, or maybe just phrases it in quite the right way so that it becomes a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so...
Yeah, there's just some elements of that, of the popularity contest.
Yeah, give it enough time. I mean,
just because you're the guy who discovers it doesn't mean you're going to be one who breaks it to the world.
Right. Retrospectively, people will acknowledge your work and your contributions and your role in it, but with enough time, you know, your unique discovery won't be unique. Someone else will find it, and then it's up to them as to whether. So it's just a matter of time.
So basically, our fate is kind of laid out in the physical layout of the physical world and the physiology of human beings.
Yeah, and our
nature. And there's not a damn thing we can do about it.
Yeah, our
the order of discoveries are going to be roughly the same, and they're all going to come out anyway.
Yeah, human beings are curious.
Inevitability.
And,
well, you're all studying the same thing.
Well, no, not necessarily, but. Also, you know, different minds, different perspectives, different techniques.
Yeah.
Some of them may see. I'm not necessarily talking about what you what you're trying to find.
Most science
talking about what you find by accident. You know, which is, in my opinion, some of the greatest scientific discoveries. Sometimes you're looking for A and you find B, and you go,
"Oh yeah, that happens all the
time." Oh shit.
Yeah, that kind of thing happens.
But by the same token, there's also two outcomes to it. The greatest discoveries can be both destructive and beneficial to mankind.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, that's right.
Hiding it doesn't necessarily mean that nobody else will find it, like you said. And it's kind of an inevitability.
No, you know, actually, I was about to give an example of a counter, but I just countered my counter in my head. So. I was going to say, like, you know, compare, you know, what I was saying about Freud, you know, and he's going hard. Of course, talk therapy is wonders for society. You know, and marketing isn't always bad. Sometimes
no,
it's good. Sometimes it's used for good stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, look at sepsis, right? Who could be mad at hand washing? But, you know what hand washing did? Population. You know,
right.
And there's all kinds of problems that come with that.
Antibiotic resistance.
Right. Now, babies don't die anymore in childbirth, right? There was a big portion of them died in childbirth. Now they don't.
Right.
Huge difference.
Do your part. Smear a little dookie on yourself a little bit.
That was awesome.
Thank you for your earnest earnest thoughts. Oh, it didn't poo on me. But yeah,
that's
so
the smell
I guess
of victory, son.
I guess that's the answer, right? I mean, you know, science is you're gonna do science, and it's gonna go in random directions, and sometimes you get a little poo on you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
That's civil service, man. I don't really have anything else to say on it besides this one funny thing that I did read on it was a game called Hearts of Iron, I think 4. And there's obviously a tech tree because it's like a war-based game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 4X kind of game, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one where you can research asbestos.
Okay.
And the subtext for it is we've discovered this miracle component. We're gonna put it on everything, and it's gonna be great. And it's completely aware, obviously, because it was made like in 2019.
Sure.
But like it was so funny because it just said,
well,
we're gonna line all of our ships with
it. Did you read my technocracy notes? I use that as one of the examples of science gone terribly wrong.
Oh well, there you go.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, like, they figured out asbestos in 1850 or something, and it was slowly ramping up. By the time the first calls came in that it was destructive around the 30s, there was this massive industrial complex around asbestos.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wanted to admit it. It took 30 years of fighting the industry before people finally,
jeez,
you know, before everyone was on the same page and said, this is going to kill you.
Yeah, or like the health effects of smoking, or hell, even lead is the best one because like the Romans figured out that lead was toxic.
Right.
And it was so widely used, and there were, you know, it took until about the mid-20th century to have really strict controls on lead.
So maybe we can't solve everything, but maybe we can solve a problem. Remember, we were talking on your show.
Yeah.
About journals and the problem with expensive science experiments,
mm-hmm,
not really having any motivation from your peers to retest.
Yeah, the lack of replicability or the lack of replication. Yeah,
lack of replication, partly because it is replicable theoretically,
mm-hmm,
but it's so expensive to run one experiment. Nobody wants to do it.
Right,
and also because, you know, the kind of the conspiracy theory view. You know, the shadowy figures in the company go, we're gonna go out of business, like Purdue,
right?
You know, we mentioned in the other show,
right?
You know, it happens. Companies do go out of business when science discovers that what they thought they had was wrong.
There's also the...
Or the side effect they didn't anticipate.
There's also the motivation of a scientist to innovate. If you're just replicating stuff, you're not innovating, and that's kind of the whole point.
Right, right. You don't make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
And maybe it would be like a moral course to expect scientists that already have a name to replicate.
Yeah.
That would be, you know, I mean, I wanted to stop them from innovating, but maybe like half time or something.
Yeah.
You know, half the time they spend on innovation, half the time it's just going through these journals and looking for the important discoveries that haven't been replicated and replicating them.
Right.
You know. Because they have the clout that they could actually pull it off. Like, I discovered blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do this in the journal.
There are ways of getting around it.
Because no one's doing that. Am I wrong?
People replicate experiments. It's just not to the kind of level that it needs to be. Like, I was going to use myself as an example because...
That's excellent.
No, because, like, there were publications where I had... You know, like, sometimes you're working on something that totally follows from some previous discovery you had. And so, as part of a publication that you're putting together, you know, a piece of it sometimes ends up being replication. Like, you reestablish a specific effect and you kind of extend it to another level, to a new, or look at it in a new way. And
right.
So that's a way of kind of packaging a replication into something novel.
Well, the ideal case would be that would always happen.
But it doesn't.
Yeah. It's not anyone's fault. It's just sometimes the way the science tree works.
If you were doing that all the time and nothing else, your career would die. So it's tricky.
Well, thanks for actually doing the replication, because both were so close. No, he got it in.
I saw everything.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Great answers, everybody. This is really like what a wonder panel. This is like really we're really going in there.
Best one in years.
And we've won in the many one third of a year that we've been on the air. All right. So
who's counting?
No one's counting. Stop counting. All right. Good. All right. I'm yelling at the screen. So if you left Earth via space travel, I know someone wants to leave Earth. So
as opposed to how else?
Well,
riding your bike.
I knew you'd be here, so I said via space travel. Okay, we're not talking about the afterlife here. I mean, sometimes that happens when you try to leave Earth. Long term or forever, do you have a responsibility to obey its laws?
The laws of space.
Earth's laws. Well, technically, yeah, space law is Earth's laws extended into space.
Okay.
So do you have a responsibility, if you're in either long-term in space or indefinitely in space, to follow Earth's laws?
Well, I don't...
Are you going to lie to me and tell me that, of course, we have to follow Earth's laws, only with the intent that once you get to space, you're going to say...
I don't want to get pulled over by the space cops. by the space fuzz.
Did anybody
space
watch?
Fuzz, nice.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm keeping that one.
Did anybody watch The Expanse?
No.
The movie that just came out?
No, it's not a movie. It's a TV show.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, I did Astra or something. Was a movie that just came out, apparently.
Oh,
deals with this.
Okay.
Astra, okay. We can't talk about that. That would definitely fall under the spoiler.
Good, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so, yeah, but I mean, I've seen enough plot synopsis out there that I could tell it applies.
You can spoil
so
whatever
let's
you
let's not
want
talk about it, right? Let's not talk about that one. But yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, no. So The Expanse deals with not too far distant future where humans have colonized Mars and the asteroid belt, right? And there are three distinct political systems.
That's new, the asteroid belt.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, so, and there is essentially becomes a civil war where, well, the Earth and the Mars colonies, like, well, we don't have to follow Earth. We are now independent, and the asteroid belt is we now are independent. So theoretically, no.
Something the revolution the world over again.
Come and get us!
It's going to be eventually. There's going to be a point where culturally, politically, technologically, even economically, you're going to become so distinct that you, almost by just time itself, you're going to become independent. So yeah, I mean, you will no longer be bound by Earth's laws and rules. You'll have your own laws and rules.
So
ideally, they'll
just
become independent.
Breathe autonomy, huh?
If they're dependent upon Earth for water and air, and
the supply line, clearly.
Then there'll always be the need to follow.
Yeah.
They may have to follow a set of rules in space that no one else has to follow. The supply line, you know, the kind of the tyranny of the supply line.
Well, Well, two things. I guess the thing that makes the 40K universe so interesting is the methods by which they make they maintain loyalty in the Grand Imperium of Man through extremely rigid, essentially theocratic worship of a supreme figure. And I'd say, let's say if I were the sort of prime director of some, like, the United Earth Colonies or whatever, like, the only way that I'd see you'd be able to, like, essentially colonizing space freely would just essentially be this super, super end goal, I'd say, of, like, the farther political sort of, without, of course, getting into politics, the farther political ideas, really. But that would kind of just be the end game.
Oh, almost all sci-fi does this.
Yeah,
but yeah. You can talk imaginary politics, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. You know, like, okay, but I'm saying, like,
you can talk, you know, specifically, oh, yes, please. I absolutely don't want to discourage civic conversation.
Okay.
You know, civic conversation is super important because we're choosing mugs here.
Sure. Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. Nice. Yeah, I mean, we the difference between civics and politics again is separating policies and the goals and the direct effects of laws.
I'm okay. Yeah. Thank you.
From the personalities.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit cheaper intellectually to talk about the personalities. Screw the personalities. I don't care. They'll be gone. Have you ever watched?
Oh yeah.
I've been following politics since the 80s. You know, it's painful to even watch something from the 90s with the personalities and, like, there, you know, there's all these little nuances to the politics between the personalities going on. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, I want to know what the civic direction of the laws and the moral consensus are.
What are the outcomes that came from
right.
it?
Right. So don't worry, man. You know, it's cool.
Okay,
you know,
that's
not really politics. That's civics.
Okay, in that case, to prevent that from happening, at that point, essentially, you'd have to set, like, a threshold and... the threshold of independence, and by the time they become essentially self-sustaining, do whatever you want. Like, you'd have to. Like, what? Like, in my opinion, you'd have
so
to.
So King George was wrong, and he should have butted out, because it was essentially the same situation. The Atlantic was huge. Mm. It was nothing like any of the other colonies. There was no supporting, you know, or countries in between. You know,
we were
self-sustaining in every sense. You know, and then he's like, "No, give them more taxes." No, thank you.
And in that case, like, you just have to.
It was also crazy too. There was that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You at that point, you just have to set up, like, an almost kind of libertarian style of exchange between, you know, the different colonies.
Well, laissez-faire, let's say.
You can
be laissez-faire without being libertarian.
Yeah. Well,
that
way
we're not pigeonhole either side into being libertarian.
Yeah, but and
I know what you mean.
But and just let the colonies supremely, if they want to fight each other, then let them fight.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously they'll be. I'd have, like, some sort of prime directive or some sort of something like that. Like, these are, like, a set of core philosophies that we should probably be following if we want to make this work. But I mean, in my head, as I'm planning this out, my idea is this is probably never going to work, and there's the chances of this not working. Knowing, I guess, humans. Because, I mean, aren't we quite the enlightened species?
Right.
This is probably going to fall on its face, and if it doesn't...
I think humanity's survival chances, I mean, this is not the question at all, but it's super interesting, so screw it. You know, I think humanity's survival chances go way the hell up once we have separate autonomous populations in a few places.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, because they're going to evolve into different things.
Sure.
And, you know, someone's going to have the wrong idea, and, well, screw them.
The thing
the people who have the right idea are going to do really well.
And eventually completely unrecognizable to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll differentiate into different species
with enough time.
Yeah, totally.
What technology will inevitably do is it will just... And what it has done always is that it's just increased the area of influence that you can have for a nation state, essentially. And obviously, like, if you go to back in time during the Holy Roman Empire, like, the whole, if you look at a map of the Holy Roman Empire, it looks big, but there's, like, it's crazy. Like, if, let's say this was the Holy Roman Empire, one of these letters is a state, and then the rest of them are all states. It's crazy. They're so tiny, and they're all pretty much somewhat autonomous.
Right.
But now, if you look at Germany now, like, it's compared to what it was back then, it's so huge.
And some would say it was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I mean, so it's obviously the transfer of information that defined the size of the cell. Of the Roman Empire.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. So probably you could run from one side of the cell to the other in the course of a day.
Right.
Full speed, but you know.
You could do it.
But a messenger could do it.
Space will be the thing, the only thing that will really keep these colonies, I say, separate from each other. But then that can be conquered, and then you're just progressing more and more into essentially, I guess, a one organization that is essentially. I mean, I always believe that you have to have some kind of unifying ethic, but it just becomes so much more easier, and people will be so much more willing, I'd say, to agree to it, because, I mean, what exactly is stopping us? Like, food? No, we can just, you know, food. Water? Water.
Right.
Et cetera.
We're going to see that in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely certain. I mean, we're already at the point now where we're talking about eliminating disease with CRISPR.
With what?
You know, with CRISPR. So CRISPR is this is for the audience too.
Cool.
I don't know if John knows this. I don't know if you were there for Sebastian's talk. We had a great talk in Lilac from an open source geneticist. But CRISPR is a biological process that was we figured out, like humans figured out about 3, 4, 5 years ago. And it was actually a group of like 6 different universities all figured out a piece of it. So they were looking at bacteria. So you know how we have an immune system and our white blood cells will pick up the pattern and the molecules
antibodies
of invaders, right?
Yeah.
So what do you do if you're a single cell? You can't do that. You don't have a vascular system to have white blood cells in it to do it. So you actually take the intruder's DNA and implant it in your own DNA to keep track of it. So your immune system is your own DNA.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you need to have a mechanism that actually can basically do a search and replace on DNA. Okay, I'm looking for this, and when you find it, insert this. That's what CRISPR is. Mm-hmm. We didn't know how to do that until a few years ago. Before that, when we wanted to do genetic engineering, we had to just throw pieces of DNA at entire DNA strands and hope it landed in the right spot until it did, which cost roughly $1 billion a genetic edit and wasn't always perfect.
Yeah.
Purely random where it would land.
Right, yeah. Right. It was just like
the wall and see what sticks.
You know, like 99.99% of whatever organism we're implanted with the DNA would die because it wasn't even feasible for it to work like that, and then they got it to a place where it actually expressed.
Based on my based on my knowledge of genetics, isn't that how it works anyway? Isn't it just really just a soup of genetic material, and they kind of just like they if it doesn't land in the right spot, they just delete it.
Well,
if
you're talking about natural selection, there's definitely random elements added in here and there.
No, I'm saying like just in like say like you're naturally replicating your own DNA into RNA.
Are you talking about genetic engineering, where you're trying to?
Well, I'm saying like in the regular biological processes.
You're just talking about just transcribing DNA into RNA.
Yeah, like isn't
normal gene transcription?
Yeah, isn't it really just like a kind of like a random thing that it's just regulated by like
No, it's well there's random parts to it,
because obviously like your DNA is not conscious. You can't like just like, oh, I'm supposed to go here, like
it's funny, I was talking about this last week, like a part of it is random, so molecules are not conscious,
but like I said, regulated by I forget what they're called, but they lyse cells if they go into some weird genetic direction. Like
biological systems have all sorts of measures in place to deal with the fact that molecules collide at random, and so if something deliberate, quote unquote, is happening, like the cell is trying to, like a gene transcription is happening because of some message the cell received from somewhere else, then you get a flood of chemicals that lead to, you know, genes being transcribed. So you have something called a polymerase. It attaches to DNA. It basically unzips it, makes a copy, creates RNA and all that. And so can this happen at random? Sure. But it usually doesn't happen in the kind of volume necessary to actually lead to a change in the cell. You know, that there's all sorts of mechanisms in place to identify mistakes like this and eliminate them. Are they perfect? No.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how biological systems deal with the random nature of chemistry.
Yeah.
Molecules just randomly colliding with each other.
Would you believe that this was the coolest thing I thought of in biology? I was thinking of like, wait, so you're telling me that there's probably like boatloads of waste from things that the cells were trying to do that they just redissolve back into the cell? That sounds funny.
Tons of that.
That was the funny thing to me. I was just like, there really is just no deliberacy in it at all. Like that's it, right. It's not.
And you piss some of it out for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Your cells extrude it into your vascular system and get rid of it. Yeah. I mean, of course, in the case of a bacteria, no. But in the past, you know, for humans to tinker with DNA, it was essentially just hit it.
Throw it at the wall.
A million times later,
basically.
This looks pretty good. Nope, that's not it. Didn't grow. Hit it. Now it's search and replace.
Yeah, it's significantly easier.
That's it. And that's the editing. You're done.
Is it cheaper?
Yeah.
It's way cheaper.
Like how much?
Like a dollar.
Like people do it
instead of a billion.
Yeah, it's very.
And this is the end, essentially. Like people
we're
think
in the end game, man. Huh. Yeah, you're on the Technocrat Live, baby. This is it. You know, there's a reason I started this show. Yeah, so there's it's terrifying, but yeah, we are within 6 months of CRISPR being discovered. China took what they thought was the autism gene, put it in monkeys. To see if the same autistic behaviors were displayed in monkeys, you know, proved autism was genetic, and it was.
Yeah.
It basically that 6 months was them just growing, maturing the monkeys. It wasn't. It took minutes to do the gene edit.
Yeah.
In the cells before fertilization.
I would preface your.
Yes, I mean I might be a little off, please.
Yeah. So it's not to say that a single gene would be responsible for autism, nor that autism is purely genetic, but
right.
A component of it absolutely is, and there are genes that have been gene variants that have been strongly associated with an autism-like phenotype, and so
right.
Then yeah, but your point is totally correct otherwise.
Yeah. Right. So actually, this is an important point, and this is something I think is true, and we're discovering more and more, now, especially now that we're in the CRISPR world, you know, because research is going so much faster now in genetics.
Much faster.
And it's a hard science. Biology 30 years ago was not a hard science like it is now. I mean, biology is a hard science. You know exactly what the outcomes are going to be for 80% of the stuff that people are doing. You know, I mean, you may get bad cases, but you know what the outcome you want is, and you know how to get it, and you may just need to throw a few attempts at it before you get it. I mean, we're in a situation where we could possibly eliminate all genetic disease, and I use that China example just because it's so radically fast, you know. And of course, China kind of doesn't have a lot of ethics, so you know.
Yeah, well,
you know, that's
okay.
Kind of why they did that so fast. They really didn't have to have a lot of discussion
on it.
Yeah, to give you another example, sickle cell anemia is a very clear genetic component, and there are already trials in place with humans where they've substituted out that genetic variant that causes sickle cell anemia with a normal variant, and it's ongoing. So yeah, stuff like that is totally happening.
Wait.
Yeah, basically sickle cell anemia has been cured. It's just a matter
possibly,
of delivery.
Yeah.
Is
this Austin Robot and we short circuit?
Wait, no, because like
I've only done to him what Mike can do on his show.
The thing I found interesting is that like when you say just like take it out and put it in the garbage and put in the normal one, like last time I checked, we got like a lot of cells.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
excellent point. Yes.
So you can't do
delivery
have to do
is the problem. That's what I was saying. Delivery the cells in your body.
With something like sickle cell anemia, you don't need to go everywhere. You need to go where the cells are being made.
Right.
Where
your
blood cells are being made.
In your bones. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to go there. So if you go there, then you can cure it.
But like you can only do it one at a time, right? Or you can,
well,
can you
in
do
the
it
case of the monkey experiment, they did it at fertilization, so they only had to do it to the egg. Or the sperm.
To one cell. Okay, yeah. I forgot that we started out as just one. I'm sorry.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
we started
with
one cell. A mature, born creature, yes, you have to apply it to all the cells that apply.
You really gave up my hopes, though, because I was thinking, I cannot be ugly. And stupid?
So this is, there were going to be designer packages in your lifetime, probably before you're too old to care, so you're going to be young enough to have to make this decision.
I hate this topic.
About having boutique genetic enhancements. It may be glow-in-the-dark stuff, it may be strength stuff, it may be appearance stuff, you know, it's possible. And forget it for your kids. You're gonna have to. Your doctors will probably just be right up front and say, "Okay, here's a checklist. Tell us what you want."
Get it. Yeah.
I'm.
That was great. I'm so glad we had this on video. I'm so glad you agreed to be on this panel. Thanks for being there.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. You can correct where I've got.
No. What you said was fine. I was going to put in some big caveats, though.
Oh, sure, please.
Which is, one is that most things are actually almost nothing. Very few things are purely genetic. And so, yeah, you can give someone genetic variants that have been associated with superior intelligence or superior strength or this, that, and the other thing. But that doesn't mean anything. Like, your environment is huge, equally or more so, depending on what you're talking about. Never mind the fact, too, that, again, very few things are regulated by a single gene. When you're talking about anything interesting, it's usually dozens, hundreds, thousands of genes.
And sometimes a gene can affect multiple things.
Yeah.
So you can be going for intelligence and end up with a side effect.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. Like, you'll get enhanced intelligence at the cost of getting some defect somewhere. You don't want that.
Well, but what this is honestly telling me is that...
Just one side effect.
Like, as this progresses on, we can just figure out like the best case for whatever sequence will allow for this.
Right. At some point, yeah. But getting that point will definitely not happen in our lifetime. And the reason why is because our genome is massive. And
it's like from here to Mars, right?
Yeah, it's huge. It's absolutely enormous. And then secondly, another thing that you guys haven't brought up, but it's important too, is non-coding sequences of DNA are hugely important. So people always focus on the parts that make proteins. You know, DNA makes RNA, makes protein, right? But those parts don't operate in a vacuum. There's all sorts of stuff in between genes that has huge regulatory consequences. So there are regulatory elements that can enhance gene transcription, can silence gene transcription, can modulate gene transcription. Mm-hmm. Those parts don't make proteins, but they sure as hell influence the outcome. And so those things, because they're small, and because they're scattered all over our genomes, are really hard to figure out and track, and new things regarding that are being discovered all the time. And so,
of course, testing on people is often unethical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this kind of stuff, totally, because it's usually not going to be associated with disease. Like, you could mess around with a rat or a mouse, but
right.
But not with a human.
So, one of the things we were talking about on our show, and this is something that I think is completely neglected in the world out there, that whenever they're talking about science,
yeah.
Which is that science is, you know, you can either you have a control, which is completely unethical in the case of genetic testing, unless right. It's an adult and they're agreeing, and usually they won't even let them, even if they do agree, unless they're facing a death sentence.
It's usually a terminal illness where you can do this. Yeah,
right, where you're allowed to do this. They won't even let you experiment on yourself
right.
Unless you have a terminal illness. And
right.
It might cure it. And then
curiosity.
So and the other one is projection, right? So if you can accurately project, okay, this gene is going to do this, and you know, and have, you know, find people with that gene and say, okay, that expressed itself.
Right.
And you have to have massive sets of data showing
right.
This is true before they let you start.
There are kind of ways around this with induced pluripotent stem cells, where you can take, like I could say, take a swab of skin cells from the inside of your cheek, and then with the right biochemical techniques, you can reprogram them into some other cell type. Like, say, if I'm interested in heart disease, mm-hmm. and you've got a family risk for heart disease, and I want to use you as a guinea pig without actually using you as a guinea pig, I could take some skin cells, I could reprogram them into cardiomyocytes, grow them in a dish, mm-hmm. and then do all sorts of stuff to them, and still get at some interesting questions, because, you know, it's not an organ, it doesn't behave like an organ, but it's still the cells, and so you can still get to some interesting questions with genetic engineering.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So you're talking about making stem cells out of ordinary cells.
Yeah. So
it's not like this isn't dead babies, right?
No, this is not embryonic.
Yeah, yeah.
So
because a lot of people associate stem cells with dead babies.
Right,
you know?
Because about 10 years ago, the only way to mess around and do experiments with stem cells was to harvest them from embryos.
But now in the CRISPR world, it's totally different.
Yeah, it's totally different. Well, this is unrelated to CRISPR.
Yeah, well
but you can combine it with CRISPR. Absolutely.
So right, you can, yes.
So.
I thought it was. I thought you had to change a gene to make a normal cell into a stem cell to tell it.
Yes. Yeah, so you can use CRISPR to accelerate the process of taking a skin cell and turning it into a cardiomyocyte. And then furthermore, you could then do more stuff with CRISPR to tweak the DNA of those cardiomyocytes and then, you know, induce a heart disease state or try to fix a heart disease state. So CRISPR can be used at all levels of the experiment I'm talking about. Am I like going over everybody's head here? Or
no, this is excellent.
Okay. Sorry.
So I was just doing a little comedy
for
the audience.
Well, you are now, like Jesus.
Sometimes I get carried away.
No, you were perfect. That was. I appreciate the explanation because I don't want to mislead people, like and underserve something and or talk about repercussions that are coming too soon because you know subtle changes like that do change the timeline.
Yeah. So you can do stuff with human tissue without doing anything invasive at all. Mm-hmm. There's a limit to what you can do with it because, like I was saying, a two-dimensional cell culture on a dish is not the same as an organ. Organs are three-dimensional. They behave very differently than cells on a dish. And cells on a dish don't organize. They do whatever the hell they want to, especially if you're talking about neurons. Neurons, when you put them on a dish, they'll grow, they'll form connections, but they're not going to be like a brain slice or like in a whole brain. There's an organization and a logic to that which you can't, or at least not yet, have been able to replicate.
Well, just like groups of genes in maybe in completely different places in the genome, in a particular DNA strand, may relate to a particular expression. Likewise, neurons can be grouped in extremely complex ways that mean nothing without the entire group.
Yes. Gene expression.
Which is why brain cell death is so detrimental.
Yeah.
Even in small amounts.
Yeah. People think about gene expression within the confines of a cell, but it's not just a cell. It's a network. It's a community. Whether you're talking about a brain or a heart or any other thing. So you know the cells one way or another communicate with each other, and they can influence each other. And so you'll have gene transcription that is not just being affected internally, but externally as well. So.
Thanks for the explanation. I appreciate it. I don't know if you signed up for this, but that was really great.
I do this stuff.
And it's important because you know this stuff is here. I mean, we're going to see it in our lifetime. We're going to have questions of it. It's possible that we may be looking at the first age group. You know, maybe myself not included, but maybe me included too.
No, I think
of immortality.
Yeah, are people going to mess with this stuff? Absolutely.
Do you want to be immortal?
How would you be functionally immortal, though?
Valhalla, you know, being this out mad.
But how could this make you immortal?
There's people who talk about it in a couple of different ways.
There's a lot of different pieces in the genome that relate to the degradation of the genome. But remember, the cells in your body are constantly replicating and replacing themselves. And there's actually some time markers in your your DNA.
Telomeres,
right. That's not the only one, but there's some.
Yeah.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
And these things will change over time as you age, and that's one of the reasons the way your body looks changes over time.
Wait.
If you can change that DNA to look like it looked when you were younger, you'll just go back to looking the way you were younger when the cells replicate again.
Wait, so in reality, like, we are only dying because our body is kind of just saying...
There's a death clock in our DNA.
Yeah, there's just a function of degradation over time, and
but
it happens... But
it's purpose.
No,
but my question is it purposeful? Is it purposeful, or is it just...
It's inherent to the system. It's inherent to the system. So when cells divide, all sorts of copying errors happen with DNA that can lead to all sorts of stuff, including things like cancer. When we consume energy, there are these things in our cells called mitochondria that do these things called oxidative reactions, which give us ATP, which give us energy. Oxidative reactions are harmful to things like DNA and other cellular processes. So again, the longer the cells are around, the more oxidative reactions are happening, the more damage happens. So it's inherent to the system. Getting around it would be complicated. In principle, it could be, but some people are doing another approach, which is rather than getting around it, the idea would be just replace things.
Which may be possible to replace things in place.
Yeah, I just talked about a moment ago about taking cells and reprogramming them into stem cells and then differentiating them into whatever cell types you want. And of course, the next step from there would be to organize those cells and figure out how they organize and create organs. I mean, there's lots of good applications for this too. Like if you are a diabetic You know.
So you, it's funny, you haven't even talked about it. So you're talking about creating organs, and I assume you mean like on like a, in a petri dish.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But like you could actually. So I'm kind of coming at it from a nanotech kind of perspective. You know, if you have nanites, you know, which. You know, sooner or later, the chips are going to stop getting faster. I mean, they already did. Moore's Law already broke. But
yeah.
We're still moving forward. As long as we keep moving forward, the inevitable destination is atomic-level circuits, at
yeah.
which point nanites are going to be a cinch, at which point delivery to any particular cell will be a matter of just typing in its address and say, go ahead, take care of that cell.
Right.
In which case, we can change, replace our cells one at a time.
Yeah, so nanotech. One could use that kind of approach for immortality. I mean, there's a more...
I mean, it's really complicated. I mean,
yeah.
You know, this is not going to happen next year.
No.
But it could happen in 30.
The thing that could happen in our lifetime, which is more immediate and practical, is that organs could be replaced
mm-hmm.
Because of a, you know, chronic condition or something like this. And mm-hmm. Or, yeah, so that could happen. But
right, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So, apocalypse. Anyway, or maybe a apocalypse just means a tragic and not a tragic, extreme end to and a rebirth. So well, it could be a good apocalypse.
Yeah, it was. I was talking to somebody about not necessarily something like this, but like about.
By the way, Johnny, your face was spectacular for that whole thing. Yeah, yeah. You were listening. Yeah. You know, that was great. You had a best face, man. Good face, Henry.
It's crazy interesting. But I was talking to somebody about how, like, essentially, like, the big question is what is the value of a single human life, obviously.
Right.
Or even more than a single human life, like, many. And I was telling this person that, essentially, if I can even remember exactly what it was. Essentially, like you might have a case where things like self-assisted suicide
mm-hmm.
becomes extremely widespread because I'm trying to sort of not sort of scope it out in like a sort of very current political way. Not even in the sense of like civics. Like this is like straight up referencing something like that is.
If there's no other way to do it, it's fine.
Okay.
You mean physician-assisted suicide?
Yes. Like
yeah, that's fine. That's yeah. Whatever. That's legit.
Well, not just.
I'm gonna put it in the list next time. So no question.
Well, no, but the what I was trying to say is that like.
Come on, Keen. Say that.
What I was trying to explain to them was that like okay, so I'm all about things like reproductive rights, but when sometimes I see like a almost sort of.
I have a right to my clone army. Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes I see like a somewhat macabre veneration of it as like being like this crazy. Not crazy. Well, you know what I mean. Like this being this like very deifying sort of signification of your supreme liberation as a free individual, and I'm just like, okay, you know, yeah. You're so.
You're not only you're the temple, you're the god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was.
My body's a temple. I'm my own god. I'm my own planet. I'm the center of the universe. Bow.
and it's
no, it, no slippery slope there.
No, I was just saying it's it. You know, it's got me kind of sweaty in my chair a bit.
No, right. No, we're all sweating. It's pretty hot in here.
Yeah.
you're not just imagining it.
Yeah. I thought it was a little strange, and I speculated in my head. Okay, so let's say, how is this not really stop? Like this to me, it feels like it's going off into maybe a bit of a dangerous territory because, like, I gave the example. Okay, imagine your son sues you because he feels as if the life that you gave him was insufficient, and then he wins the case of custody for himself, and then he opts for self-assisted suicide because it's in his full right to do so.
Okay.
And I was thinking, okay, like
you
that.
You just described most royal dynasties. Continue.
and I was telling, okay, and even they agreed with me that that's kind of terrifying. And I was thinking, okay, it
don't run for king.
Yeah, it sounds a little terrifying. And it's interesting that you were telling me about like CRISPR now, because I'm thinking like, okay, compound that with all these new things like gene editing and AI and whatever, and you're looking at a future that is very. It's almost
Dystopian.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's dystopian.
If only we knew more about this dystopia.
It's dystopian, but it's interesting because we were really striving to make life more meaningful, weren't we?
Right. That was the intent.
That was the point, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, but, well, if you're the center of the universe, so whatever you do makes your own life more meaningful.
And, right? I told her that, like, the conservatives of tomorrow, which is going to be people like me,
right,
of my age, we're going to be the ones sort of struggling to get people to value life at all. But they're going to be like, no, I can just take this pill and then I can be anything what I want.
So exactly. you're kind of picturing the humanity turning into the Strog. And I was just like, I have better meat. I am getting more meat from Meat Vat, the meat crush evil soldier in Doom.
Yeah, and it's like, well, like I was trying to tell them, like, listen, you know, okay, so obviously everybody knows the boomer meme.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, is that big thing on the internet? I was telling, like, listen, there's even like a page on the internet, like on Facebook, that sort of is made literally just to make fun of the whole idea of that. And I was telling, like, hey, listen, these are gonna be you in a few years.
Yeah.
And you're going to be battling with the newer generations with the same kind of questions. Hey, how valuable is your life? And do we have the right to essentially tell you how valuable your life is?
And the answers are going to be all new.
Yeah, they're
exactly
going to be different.
And then, well, you see, that's what's different. These questions have always been asked. But what's different is the answers are changing. The answers are different now.
Yeah.
And the answers are changing faster than ever.
Yeah. Right.
Right, which is what actually makes having conversations. This is why I love this show, and I want to have this show happening, and I want to have intelligent people contributing and supporting each other, or maybe ripping each other apart, hopefully supporting each other. But, and discussing this, because the faster it changes, the faster we need to, the more effort we need to put it to keep up.
Yeah.
It's really not going to be a question of can, it's going to be a question of should.
Yeah. The only thing that's going to really stop us is just the amount of resources that we have available.
I don't really think it's going to stop us.
Well, yeah, but then I'm saying, like, then, again, yeah, it's going
to... The resource depletion of the planet is way overhyped.
It is.
We could support 40 billion people, 50 billion people. That's a few generations out.
No,
we're
not
going to live to see it. It may be ugly. It may be messy. It may be disease-ridden and garbage-covered. But it is possible.
Mega city,
I mean, our agriculture alone, without even adding any genetic changes to the agriculture itself, there are some plants that are extremely tolerant of really hostile conditions. You can add those genes into the existing crops. The things that we can do, which are terrible and dystopian, but to make it so humans continue to breed, is almost endless.
Yeah.
We can have a lot of people on it. We could probably have 100 billion on the planet.
That's actually the what started this the conversation with that person about the idea of overpopulation. I kind of without going too crazy. And
it's ironic that this conversation is actually centered in the United States, because the United States, like, having been to the physical United States, it's really empty.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
we're nowhere. A lot of people are joking that the Chinese are going to come and just like take over. And okay, we want Minnesota.
okay,
but. It's really like that empty. Sorry, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Chime in if you object to that.
Minnow where?
All right. Well, that was great. So we kind of covered my question. So I have a loaded question. It's a little dangerous. We're almost done, right?
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? We barely got started, and we're like, what time is it? It's I thought it was
23.
Oh wow.
So, yeah, we started late. So we started half an hour late. So we're only got 45 minutes left, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks. I hope everybody's having fun. If you have any questions, we can actually see your questions in real time.
Yeah.
So you can troll us if you want, if you dare.
You guys are on the big screen.
If you dare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, genetic reversibility is a real thing. So we'll find you.
Yeah.
All right. So... what are the alternatives to animal testing for fatal diseases, and are they good enough? Do we have to test with animals to make progress in genetics, and if we don't, when do we have to cross the line and say, is animal testing like democracy in its the least bad system? Or is it just completely unethical?
Hmm. Well, you know what? Going back to, I guess, what I talked about, the value of a single human life, this is going to probably... I mean, be thanks to this, like, can we agree that the main, I guess, the thing that's mainly holding back massive, insane technological process is the fact that we value human life.
Yeah.
Like, and I predict
that crap would have already been out of control.
I would predict that as human life just becomes.
We were there in the 40s, right?
Yeah.
There were countries doing really abhorrent things.
Right. But, I mean, like, listen, like, take some of the German science that they discovered from experimenting on
people,
humans.
You know, of course we got good stuff out of it, but was it worth it? No. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
worth it? No. But would you use the research, the results of that research?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be ethical to use the results of that research?
We do.
Like, countless.
Whether we're ethical or not, we definitely do. It's
countless millions have been saved. I mean, we bailed out Wernher von Braun to help us get into space.
Right.
You know, it's crazy, but.
I'm on the moon. Come get me. Na, 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 Jehovah, Jehovah.
Oh God, it's the fuzz.
Space fuzz.
Space fuzz.
Space cops.
All right. No, I mean, look, I did warn you guys this would be tough. You don't have to answer. You know, I've had conversations go completely. Full speed in both directions, both for and against animal testing. I do tend to value intelligent life more highly than non-intelligent life.
What if we could use non-intelligent life?
Well, there's that too, right? Animal 57, we can grow meat vats now.
What if we could?
Maybe that's the answer. Maybe animal testing is unethical because we can do meat vats.
We have technology to change the genome, right?
It kind of leaves you in a lurch, right, because you're an biologist.
I have a very clear opinion on this, but I'm waiting. I'm going to let you guys talk.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
What if we could breed bodies without brains, consciousness?
Mm. Right.
Homunculi.
Right.
I think they're called homunculi.
No, homunculus is your brain's representation of your body.
Oh, well, I was reading too much Full Metal Alchemist. Then I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Do they have working sex organs? That's the darkest thing I could have
heard.
This conversation just took a weird turn.
Quantum
simulation.
Like,
this is what happens to you when you get when you're married this long. So.
No, I'm telling you. It's going to come to the point where not even the intelligence of a creature is going to be able to determine its worth. Like, what as we progress on, the worth is going to come from the things that we create. It's going to be completely divorced from what we are. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's going to...
Agreed.
Yeah, it's going to... Wasn't that kind of the plot of iRobot? Wasn't it?
Well, I don't know.
What's the value of a single human life?
For me, the main plot of iRobot was the automation... there was the upgrade treadmill.
Oh, okay.
You know, and being forced onto it and the consequences of that.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, but my point is that, like, it's going to... It is going to come to the point where, like... People are just gonna. It's gonna be like a no-brainer. Like, hey, would you donate your body to science, or would you partake in experimentation? You just feel like, yeah, of course so. Like, I mean,
hundreds of adults have let people mummify them and put them in a museum,
so
people can see how their muscle fibers look.
Yeah, because if you die, I mean, like, hey, that's just. I mean, you're not alive anymore. What's the worth of living anyway?
There's only limited amounts of information that you can actually get from that. Right?
Yeah. From a postmortem, absolutely. Yes.
I mean, look at Mark Kelly and his twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
Right, one of them went into space for a year, and then they took measurements of their bodies.
Oh, identical twins are the perfect case.
Identical twins. One goes into space for a year. One stays on Earth. Afterwards, we measure their craniums. We
do a whole bunch of
and compare.
What was the result?
Try to see what's the long term.
And there were real results from that. The bone density was through the floor for the spacefaring brother.
The only way that you're going to find a lot of the deviations is by using exact copies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Control.
Yeah.
It's control or projection.
Yeah,
that's all you can do with science.
And
you can project and be accurate or not accurate, or you can do a control. That's it.
I
or it's not science.
What you're talking about in terms of these twin brothers is done all the time in the context of animal testing. So a lot of... I mean, you might imagine, like,
you wouldn't be surprised by what I'm about to tell you, which is that probably like 80%
I've done the genetic lab tour, so
yeah,
I'm familiar with the process.
No. So like if you looked at all the research that's being done out there and what organisms is being done on, if you're talking about whole organisms and not cells in a dish, probably like 85% that's rodents, maybe more, mm-hmm. and then maybe like 5% or so that's primates, and then the remaining is just some assortment of other animals. The overwhelming majority of it is rats and mice, and one of the reasons why people like using mice in particular is the fact that people have developed tons of lines of genetically identical mice. They're these mice that have been inbred for so many generations, in some cases like literally 80 years of inbreeding. Mm. So when you take
And what's the life cycle of a mouse or a rat? Like 6 months?
In the lab?
Before they're being impregnated?
Or? So in the wild, it's probably less than a year. In the lab, they can live to about like 2 years or so.
No, but how quick till they're sexually mature?
Oh. So in that case, probably about 6 weeks after birth.
Oh, and, my God. 80 years is 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a lot of generations.
And every month, they'll make another litter of between six and ten. So if you've got a breeding colony, you can make hundreds of mice in no time flat. And they're all genetically identical.
Not a natural species. They're a man-made species.
They're a man-made species at this point. Those types. There are others that are genetically diverse, and there's a purpose for those kinds of animals for testing. But genetically identical mice are extremely useful because their genomes are controlled. They're all perfect replicas.
So they're essentially non-lethal velociraptors.
Yeah.
No, from an ethical standpoint, that's what they are. They're velociraptors,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, they just don't let them loose because something weird will happen that we don't understand.
All right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a lot of value in that because you can, and also it's like their genomes are fully sequenced. There's all sorts of techniques that are at your disposal with mice in particular and rats that you can't do with any other organism, and so you can just answer lots of questions you couldn't otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of other opinions, but I don't know if I want to just chime in now or wait.
That's up to you.
Yeah, all right.
You can
screw
go
it, I'll
for
go.
It, or...
Yeah, so, will there ever be alternatives to animal testing for diseases? I think, sure. Like, I kind of alluded to it a few minutes ago when I was talking about stem cells and if you can eventually figure out how to engineer organs with human tissue, then that's a hell of a lot better than any rat or mouse, because then you've got a working organ that you can study, or potentially organs, and that'll give you far more interesting information than a rat or a mouse will.
Right.
But we're not there yet.
You're thinking of people with pet livers just to be dicks?
Yeah.
You know, like I have a pet liver. Oh, I love livers. You know, you wouldn't do this to my liver, would you? You know? And put little googly eyes on it, you know. Take it to the park on a leash.
Jesus. The other thing I would say about animal testing is that, people often talk about modeling, like computer modeling or something like this. And although in theory that sounds like a good idea, in practice we're absolutely nowhere near that yet. Like, you can take an organism as simple as like a cockroach or a paramecium or some basic thing. Mm-hmm. And if you want to tell me that we understand how that thing works from the inside and out, we don't. And those things are simple. Like, they're simple enough that every cell is mapped out. You know how everything connects to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And nevertheless, we still don't know how those organisms work in their entirety.
Right.
So why the hell would we be able to do that for a human disease?
Well, how about C. elegans, right?
Yeah, C.
elegans are a special case of a very simple multicell, but very, it's actually their DNA is one of the shortest DNA strands.
Yeah,
and they're extremely well mapped.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but it's an animal.
Yeah.
You know, all right, so what? What's it, 800 cells, 1,000 cells?
Yeah.
You know.
Every cell could be identified, every connection can be understood, and we still don't quite know entirely how they work.
Right, right. So, clearly there's a point at which, something's too so simple that we don't care. So the question is, what makes that point?
Right.
Right. You know, this is kind of where I was going before with the cute thing, putting the googly eyes on the H-bomb, It's so cute, I love you, hello kitty. Oh, goodbye kitty,
Yeah.
Yeah, so how much of this is human nature and how much good can be done, It's clearly a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
On the one hand, you got Nazis.
Right.
Very little data, very much killing.
Right.
At the other side, you have C. elegans. It's barely an animal.
Right.
The point is in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And I've seen this argument made before about cattle. You know, I mean, sure, pigs, you release them into the wild, within a couple of generations they're feral again. But cattle aren't like that.
No.
You know, if you want us to stop eating cattle, guess what we're going to do? We're going to kill them all.
Yeah.
We're not going to feed them for free. Mm. You know, no. Bye-bye, the whole species is gone.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the end result if we really went all vegetarian. So.
Yeah, they would become extinct. They can't sustain themselves. I mean, corn right. would also probably go extinct, too.
Right. Well, yeah, no, it's, yeah. I
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, okay. All right, so have I upset everyone enough? Is anyone watching anymore?
I'm seething in the face. I'm about to start throwing hands.
Yeah, okay, cool. Thanks for that. I appreciate it.
Jeez.
Feedback from the engineering booth.
Nice.
All right. All right, that wasn't as... I thought that was going to be much more angry or
you know,
it was much more back and forth than I was fearing. You know, so...
Did I miss like the really hard and complicated and hateful ones?
What?
Like did I miss, no? I'm saying did I miss the really mean
no,
questions?
No, we're saving them for you.
Okay, good.
Well, no, I mean this is. I mean, these people get upset. These are serious questions with real consequences. Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's. Nobody likes it when their grandma's the one that gets cancer, right? You know.
Yeah.
So you know, and then it's like, well, just throw some mice at it, whatever. You know, like. Right. So, but is that appropriate or not? Sometimes it depends. You know, like I said, it's a spectrum.
There's a gray area.
And as long, you know, for me, as long as intelligent, conscientious people are using the least intrusive, least offensive, lowest order organism they possibly can to get the work done, I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and I, with one proviso, I would say. Intelligence to the point of empathy is kind of off limits with that. If it's intelligent enough to give consent, it must give consent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I mean by consent is a coherent understanding of what the future means.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is, a lot of people project that in animals, but they don't really express that.
Yeah.
The animals don't really understand
no.
the future. They understand now.
They understand now. And
It's interesting that you say that, because in this sort of dystopian scenario I was talking about with the in this interesting scenario, because I mean I do think it is coming. I think that whoever wrote the A Brave New World had it kind of spot on.
Oh yeah.
When he was talking Huxley?
When
he was talking about how consent is implied and also illegal if you don't offer it, especially for things like sex. You know? Like I think that these things like, would you consent to some kind of testing, scientific testing on yourself? I think that kind of consent, even if we're going even further down, would be implied. And maybe the silver lining is that it's just so much easier to provide reparations for if things go wrong.
Yeah.
I think that the way that people's brains work, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, I think it's just a symptom of humanity. Like, I'm going to get into my own personal stuff here. I'm going to get the Civ gene here. But, you know, so
I'm so excited.
So one of the things I think here is that we're, the way people work, we are capable of seeing the future in a way that other animals aren't. And you can give consent with the intent that it's indefinitely into the future, but also you can revoke consent. But if you haven't revoked it, you should still have it, right? People can't say, well, you have to continually consent.
Yeah.
Continual consent is what an animal would have to do to give consent, right? Which is why they can never give consent, because they literally can't continually, you know, it's just like any continuous curve. If you reach that, you can't ever give enough consent.
Right.
Yeah.
So you either can give consent forever, or you can't give consent at all.
Wait, so are you saying that we're not going to reach that point?
No, I'm saying that humans are here, but what I'm saying is that, because a lot of people are getting into arguments about how to define intelligence, I think intelligence is at least partially behaviorally defined.
Okay.
And one of the things that makes us intelligent is our ability to give consent. And the reason for that is because the human mind is in the past, the present, and the future in a way that other animals are just in the now.
Yeah,
it's
we have
just,
that
they're just reacting to things
that
happening.
They don't have, or they don't have it in the same way that we do. Yeah.
Right. They don't understand. This is why animals don't have property, they have territory. Right, you know, a human being will look at a cabin in the woods and go, oh, crap, that belongs to someone, I better not go in there. And it doesn't necessarily have to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be untrained. Ukraine too, by the way. In China, there's no property. You can just walk across a farmer's field and nothing happens to you, because it's considered everybody's property. But that's not the norm. That's the exception.
Is that really true?
That's really true. Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, there's videos out there of people that just, you know, you can just, if you have a dirt bike, you could just right, you know, go right through, as long as you're not destroying the crops.
Right.
Stay on the paths and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there isn't really a concept of property, but that's the exception. Most human cultures and most human civilizations have a concept of property, and I think that's actually just how we work.
Yeah.
You know, and we can untrain ourselves, but we have to untrain ourselves too. Anyway, that's what part of the Civgene stuff. So I could be wrong on that, but I don't think so. Can't wait for someone to shoot me down. really, at this point, I just want to shut the server off and be like, okay, I don't care anymore. But, you know, like, so far I haven't gotten
I'm sure God wants to do the same thing.
Yeah, shut up, stop that. Yeah.
I heard something decently interesting about someone referred to a house as not a place to live, but just a place to keep your stuff.
Huh.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Because we were all inherently nomads. We never lived in any place. We just kind of traveled as the weather kind of...
Right, right.
Yeah, so, until about 10,000 years ago.
Well,
yeah.
So a lot of this...
There is...
That is an excellent point. So there's a really great... CGP Gray has a really great video on this where he went into the examination of game animals versus farm animals. And the problem... The reason that you don't really see heavy civilization in North and South America is it because they were better or worse than us? It's because they didn't have farm animals.
Hmm.
You know, you can't put a fence around a buffalo; he'll smash through it. You can't put a fence around a deer; he'll jump over it.
Yeah.
You know, but you can put a fence around a sheep.
Hmm. Right.
You can put a fence around a cow. You can put a fence around a chicken. So they had Europe and Eurasia and Africa had all the farm animals. Where that's why. Civilization looked different over there.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a lot of the reasons that the Indians got their butts kicked when we came over here. It wasn't just ruthlessness, although there was plenty of that.
And disease.
Well, disease, that's what it was.
Germ warfare.
Germ warfare, and the reason that we had all the best diseases, because we live with the farm animals.
Well, yeah.
Literally, the European advantage when moving to North America was, we live with farm animals, yeah!
Yeah. And we interestingly, when it was one-on-one, the Mesoamerica versus Europe, and Europe had its ass kicked.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wait, Mesoamerica is in...
Aztec, Mayan...
Right, oh, right. That's true.
We only won because of the disease.
Right.
Yeah. And the reason we had the disease is because we had the farm animals.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't right or wrong, bad or good.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a chicken and an egg thing. It may be that civilization gave us the concept of property and that became the thing that we were capable of. It may just be that we had the possibility of I think it was, I don't think that's the way it was. I think it was we enabled to reach the ability to see a future.
Mm-hmm.
And like, okay, now I see that we have a future and therefore I can plant crops because I trust the people around me to not steal from me. Right, because that's the farmer's problem, right?
Yeah.
If you plant crops, what's the key? A pillager from taking your stuff.
Just coming in and taking your stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you specialize in farming, he specializes in warfare. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, every season. Bye.
I mean, recently on my show we did The Prince by Machiavelli, and he was kind of plain about it because he was Machiavelli. He was pretty plain about how you don't own the things that you can't protect.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's true. And what I'm arguing is that the only way that you can farm and protect is if you work as a group. And the only way you can work as a group is if you default to trust.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So, which has interesting implications for our social media world.
Yeah. Not only that, but
because we're all running in different directions now.
Well, not only that, but like me and Mike were also talking about. I don't think we did this on any episode just yet, but we were talking about the development of morality, about how what it really did kind of boil down to was it seemed to me that our body was actively trying to optimize our energy systems, like our systems for using and compartmentalizing energy, and these had a lot of say into how we, our moral, like our senses of morals came into being, because what deferring trust does is it saves you a lot of energy. Because if everybody's on the same page, then you can...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not... This is not a bleeding heart thing. This is fucking ruthless metal Darwinism. Right? I mean, it's, having a conscience is a huge advantage. And just ask any psychopaths who's reached the end of their rope. You know, right? Because they're the ones who don't have. I'm not mad at them. A lot of people are mad at them. I'm not mad at them. I feel bad for them. They have a disease and they don't have actually any mechanism in society to deal with their disease in the open.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just starting now, right? But yeah, I mean, they can't assess risk like we can, you know, because part of that is that the trust is actually a side effect from the risk. It's our conscience is a risk assessment engine. That's what I think it is.
Yeah.
And they just can't see what's going wrong around them, and they have to depend on us, and we're not giving it to them. We're just ridiculing them for being less, which is tribal and crappy. So, you know, yeah, go psychopaths, but let me look at what you're going to do before you do it. Good point about Darwin. I think you're right. I think it is a lot. You want to conserve energy.
Energy optimization, yes.
Yeah, it is. It's all about the calories.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, okay. So, and I have one for me, but. Give me an example of a good science fiction positive rule to live by in real life.
Wait.
Oh, it can be fantasy too, but probably science fiction will work better.
Do or do not, there is no try.
Nice!
Oh, that's good.
Excellent. You know, he wore a Yoda shirt on your show. Was it? No, you didn't wear it.
No, I wore
the Yoda shirt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very that's in character. Awesome. No, you're right. You're totally right.
Man. I'm struggling to come up with one.
Okay. Science fiction positive. Like something from iRobot, for example, would be a good, you know. I'll give you mine while you guys think. So mine is Futurama, don't have sex with robots. It's just terrible consequences. Don't date robots, don't have sex with robots.
Jesus. That's
so
awesome.
I knew I was going to go to this one before so I could say the thing I said before and save myself.
Oh,
okay,
man.
You really didn't mean it. Yeah.
That's great.
They're right, you know. Bye-bye genetic line. You know.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry.
No, okay. That's fine. Live long and prosper, you know.
I just wish I paid attention to the things they said in the scientific movies, not the cool lasers and shit.
Right, right. Well, if you think of one, shout it out later, okay?
Sure.
We'll come back to it. So, what do you guys think of? Who here knows what the Biogenome Project is?
Sorry, the what?
The Biogenome Project.
Okay.
Does anybody know what the Biogenome Project is? I knew you know, but...
Yeah.
That seems like a bunch of words and then project at the end.
So it's the biosphere.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll actually read you. I wrote a copy and pasted their mission statement.
Oh, cool. Right.
Create a foundation for biology to drive solutions for preserving biodiversity and sustaining human societies.
Okay.
Sounds like it could be any bullshit, right?
Okay. Is that taking samples of many living creatures and...
Not just many living creatures.
All living creatures.
All living creatures.
Every living creature.
It is the modern NOAA project.
Kind of like the seed bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As it's proposed.
We have to establish the presupposition of what exactly is the value of the biodiversity there.
Right.
So what is the value of it?
Well, you could argue that the value is nothing. If they're all dead. And what I mean by that, I don't just mean, obviously, yeah, right, yay, murder! But no, what I mean by that is that if they're not integrated into a system with each other, the data from the sum is greater than the parts.
Yeah.
And they're talking about cataloging the parts. So without a working system, it may not be so valuable. Mm. Just like if somebody was trying to jumpstart a dinosaur biosphere, it might go terribly wrong. We don't have any movies about that, you know. Right? There might be things might be completely out of balance. I mean, they've done biospheres before, right? They've done they had a experiment, a terrestrial experiment where they tried to replicate the ecosystem of the Earth and everything died. Didn't, like a few months in, they had to cancel it because everyone was starving. You know,
wasn't Pauly Shore in there?
Biodome.
It was a real experiment too, man.
Wait, really?
Yeah, there was a real.
And they used actual.
They were trying to figure out how Mars terraform, how Mars colonies would work at first.
Oh, and it was actual people.
There was yes, this was for the Pauly Shore movie was based on a real experiment. Jeez. There were several of them actually.
And they all failed.
As far as I know, they failed. Actually, that might be something for Steve. Sorry to bug you, Steve. We're trying to figure out how many biodome projects there were and if they all failed. Mm. I think they all failed.
Mine yeah. wouldn't.
We haven't gotten the secret formula to a sustainable...
The sustainable little ecosystem there.
Ecosystem, right.
Yeah. So,
which is one of the reasons that people are alarmed about climate change, and it's a completely justified one, you know, yeah, because yeah. if we never know what the full consequences of losing any particular species.
What?
Are you talking about within biosphere too?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking about has there been a successful biosphere
if there's a two,
experiment?
Then there was a one, so
one you know,
at least
failed.
One failed. Yeah, we have at least one failure. I was one, right once.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it was like you know, like a football taunt at the end of the quarter, you know, hey, yeah, we're winning, you know. Yeah. I don't think so, though.
I mean, it seems like the problem right off the bat with I guess any biosphere experiment is that like you're trying to skip the initial steps of forming well not necessarily evolution
all,
but form
all seven bio projects of the biosphere was. Were failures.
There we go.
The seven of them. Oh my God.
Biosphere 2 is considered a successful failure.
Okay.
Wow. They learned a lot from that failure, I guess.
That's what they're going by.
That's great.
They're sticking to their guns.
Okay.
All right. Well, so Matt Damon would actually die on Mars. No, was it Matt Damon? No.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I hope I ruined that movie too. We ruined movies. All right, so.
2 months.
So.
Yeah, 2 months. Way past 2 months.
Yeah. But yeah, it seems like you're trying to go. You're trying to skip to the last step in the actual creation of celestial bodies, essentially.
Yeah.
Of universal, of the things in the universe. Like you know, it seems like you got if you can isolate the thing that matters the most, and then kind of copy the rest, then maybe it can work.
Right.
Yeah. Like, what's the most important thing in this whole...
The sun, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the most important thing? It's not the sun. Oh, yeah, it was the sun.
Oops. Yeah, you have about enough time to say oops.
It's really cold! Turn it back on!
I'm starting to regret my previous statement.
Welcome to the Technocrat Live. Laugh with me.
Yeah. But no, yeah. What's the? I mean, yeah, the sun.
I think I need to drink more.
So okay, so yeah, let's make a sun. Yeah, and then your biosphere will definitely not fail this time.
So I did some interesting math on this.
Oh boy,
this is kind of
on the biogenome project.
The biogenome project.
Okay.
So let's assume
the Matt Damon biogenome.
Let's assume that using stem cell. What was the name of that stem cell technology you were talking
the
about?
The iPSC derived cells, induced pluripotent stem cells.
iPSC.
Yeah, those.
That's going on my list.
Yeah.
iPSC stem cells. Okay, so let's say you're using iPSC stem cells and CRISPR, and you essentially can recreate any fungus, animal, and plant. With like we get to a point where technology gets to that point.
Yeah.
Which is coming, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the premise.
Yeah.
So you have the complete DNA of every plant, of every animal, and every fungus on the planet.
Right.
So knowing what I know about the IT part of genetics,
mm-hmm.
So it actually figured out, hold on, I got this, I have the math written down here. This is kind of cool.
Okay.
So I think I worked out to 20,000 pounds of hard drives.
Wow.
At when the completion of the biogenome project, when it's complete, if you have one copy of each DNA, which is probably not enough, right? Because you need more genetic diversity than that.
Yeah, it's more than that. I mean, what they're trying to do with this project is not just sequence the DNA of every organism that is out there. It's also sequencing as many members of that species.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being that, like, all of us, we all have different DNA, and so, like, let's just say some new disease comes in here, and One of you guys is the lucky one who has the right genetic variants that keeps you alive, and the rest of us are dead.
No. This is absolutely an awesome project.
I'm not
trashing it at all.
Oh, okay. So So keep going where you're going.
It's a way I can figure it, it takes about 20,000 pounds of hard drives when this is completed, based on hard drive shrinkage. You know, growth. Storage growth.
You wouldn't use SSDs.
Using SSDs, using the biggest SSDs you can get.
An obscene pile of SSDs, yeah.
But 20,000 pounds is a real number. That's like something that we can do.
Achievable.
We can send 20,000 pounds into space. So theoretically, someone could take the entire biogenome project, put it on a set of hard drives, put them in a rocket, and fly away with Earth.
Yeah.
And essentially do a NOAA to another planet.
Right, if that other planet has organisms that can understand that stuff and make some new,
just bring enough people and who have the understanding of the genetic science, and you can start it all over
and
again.
You could
one species at a time. I mean, it might be hard to get it jump started with just one species at a time.
Yeah,
maybe, you know, if you could figure out the biogenome project component of it.
Yeah.
And start an ecosystem, a sustainable ecosystem. You're off to the races.
Well.
Yeah.
Quite literally, potentially.
Well,
nice.
I'm finding that based on my little knowledge of these things, I guess right off the bat, the two things that you need to do in order to make these things work, right? It seems to me is that for one thing, you have to be able to create life that is well suited to the kind of life that would develop on a world based on whatever conditions it's sun.
We're not talking about creating. I mean, all right. So the life
hitting Earth.
I'm talking about replicating Earth.
That is what I'm talking about. But I'm saying, like, if you want to make it work, say on Mars, then you need to be able to.
We have to terraform Mars first.
Well, yeah, yeah. But
there needs to be more oxygen. It needs to be water. It needs to be warmer.
Well, yeah, but
by the same token, taking that same the outcome of that same project and sending it aloft, you know, far, far away to where it may find an Earth-like planet in some other system.
Right.
It could travel for eons.
Right.
And yet, when it arrives at its destination, assuming that the mechanics were still intact,
right.
If the conditions are similar to that of Earth,
that is not where I was going at all. But that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And actually, it would be really funny.
Humankind would never know the difference.
That whatever sentient species it was, talked like squeaky toys. Because then they would be like, the first thing they would do would probably be to replicate our pets. And of course, the dogs would immediately start biting them because they would sound like squeaky toys. Uh-huh. And they would be like, what kind of horrible people were these? These were their pets? Sorry, I just.
A helium based planet?
Yeah. If only they knew that they had more helium in their atmosphere than ours. Yes, we had probably to send some ancillary data along with that.
You would need to be able to create life that, or you need to start maybe start in a place that has a very similar relationship with the sun that we have in, I guess, affecting us. Because it seems to me that the dynamics of sun to surface of world, the way that life kind of revolves around it or the lack thereof, it needs to be the life needs to be optimally suited for.
So there's two strains of thought. We talked about this a little bit on your show. One is that life is the peak point on the bell curve, and really most life is just going to be a very small circle on a bell curve of possible living conditions on different planets.
Right.
And that we're just luckily inside that zone.
Right.
The other one is that it's a much bigger zone, and that life actually uses different elements and it has different temperature ranges and may not even be recognizable to us. It may be gaseous.
Right. We have no point of reference.
Essentially,
to know.
It's a sentient fart, a la Rick and Morty,
Right.
So we don't know. I mean, it could be sentience in plasma inside of suns for all we know.
Yeah.
We have no way to measure it. So if there's one where the curve is broad and there's one where the curve
is narrow.
Is a very tiny point on the curve.
Right.
Possible planets. So I don't know. Who knows? We don't know the answer.
Yeah, and also it seems to me that you also would probably need to do these experiments with like billions of people.
right.
in order for it to even somewhat.
Which they are people. We try to do people too.
I think that's what the idea of the experiment is.
That is exactly the idea: is to get as many
take all the variants of human beings. Okay. You know, all the variants.
Wait, but I guess I was going to ask a question. But didn't these experiments have like what was the sample size of humans for these experiments then?
Well, it's something ongoing. The idea would be to sequence every organism that's alive on Earth so that you have the full scale of what biodiversity is on this planet.
In other words, we can't figure a biodome out. We're just going to do everything.
Wait, these experiments failed.
The biospheres failed. The Biogenome Project is a different thing.
Yeah, the biospheres were an attempt to take different elements from our ecological system and put them in a tent.
Right.
And not let anything air out.
A self-contained little ecosystem.
And can you have the right plant, the right mixture of plants, insects,
bacteria, animals, etc.
Exactly.
To create a self-sustaining thing. But that's separate from this, where the Biogenome Project is an attempt to sequence as many.
Yeah, I made it's my fault. I took the Biogenome Project and went something completely different than what people are actually doing with it. And said, why don't we launch it into space?
But it's fine because it was awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it hyperbole. But yeah, so the Biogenome Project is just trying to, in case, I think its primary purpose, searchability probably is the main purpose.
Searchability is definitely the main, that's what I was trying to get at with my disease example.
And the secondary purpose would be an insurance policy in case there's any more extinction events.
Right, which there certainly will be.
Yes. So that at least we haven't, you know, like, oh crap, the cure for cancer was in that rhinoceros we just killed off.
Right.
Damn it. Exactly. Nope, we have the genes. Maybe we can bring them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Click restore. Right click restore. There you go.
restore. Stop that! All right, so there's a few more questions. We've actually run out the clock because of these great conversations.
Cool.
So I'm going to have to skip a couple questions. But I got a tough one for you, and then I got an easy one, and then we're probably going to wrap it up. So the tough one is the journalist one. So everyone I've had the show, but this is, what is this? What show is this? I don't even know what show. We are 27. All right, we have 27 shows, and I haven't gotten one dissent on the idea that we really need to have some kind of journalistic retraction requirements. The web pages have murdered journalism, and the ability to change the web page on the fly, which most of the journalistic outlets do, without issuing a visible retraction, is hurting us. It's hurting democracy, it's hurting humanity, it's hurting civics. So, what do we do? Nobody said what we should do. So, for me, you know, it seems obvious we want some kind of full log of what was said and then what it was changed to later, you know. Yeah. So it's just a question of how do we make that log come about?
Like the Wayback Machine?
Do we do it with, you go to a page and there would be some way for you to determine whether there was any redactions on that page.
Yeah.
Or retractions. You know, like this was wrong, now it's this. Or it used to be this before, and now it's something else.
Right.
You know, like you don't necessarily have to change the web page, but you have to say, yes, this has been revised somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
so
for journalistic sources, to be considered a journalistic source.
Yeah, but the organization that's hosting...
I have a dissent. Okay, go ahead.
The organization that's hosting this very web page is the same organization that published it in the first place.
Let's say
if they made a mistake, it's not in their best interest to advise everybody, we made a mistake.
Right, okay, so you do agree.
And we called out this guy instead of that guy.
Right, yeah. Well, this is the problem, is that all these organizations have a vested interest in not being as honest as possible.
Right.
They're not posting their retractions, or they're posting their retractions somewhere else where you can't see it. And the problem is, the retractions are not anywhere near as viral as the original stuff.
Of course.
Yeah.
This is a huge problem. I mean, this is a democracy killer, I think.
It is.
You know. So what do we do? So the two options that I can see, and then maybe other options too that I'm not including this,
like the
one is a law requiring some kind of retraction scheme, right, where you can know where to go to get retractions, or break media up until and just keep breaking it up until it naturally occurs through a market pressure. So until, you know, the dominant journalistic outlets start doing this on their own just because of market pressure. Like, it's not, you're not a quality journalist, because you don't have your attractions posted.
Yeah.
In full. Right? So those are the two I've got. So are either one of those would you prefer, or would you want to offer a third solution?
Well, I know for a fact that there is there's an app that you can install on like your browser, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what it essentially does is that it adds a comment section to literally any web page.
Right.
Anyone.
Talking about Dissenter?
Yes.
Yes. That's the Gab
remember.
App. Yes.
Yeah. I just remember
that. That is a Web 2.5 app, as far as I'm concerned, and it is the key to getting out of our Web 2.0 walled garden, which is preventing us from getting to, you know, accessing or manipulating or viewing our own metadata, which is what retractions are. They're metadata.
Yeah.
So,
controversy aside for Gab and other kind of.
Ignore it. Forget it. It's not even worth talking about.
Yeah. But I think that's a good step, because what you'll find is that a lot of, like, YouTube Rewind, I know, like, for the past times that they've done it, haven't necessarily had the best run. If you pay attention to the memes at all,
I'm not familiar. What is YouTube Rewind?
YouTube Rewind is that essentially it's a showcase of like some really cool stuff that's gone on YouTube essentially for the past like year, and people's main contention is that they just show you like the most mainstream stuff, and it's all like such fabricated crap. And
right, right. So basically, it's just CNN used YouTube once.
Yeah,
here's ESPN. Oh look, here's here's Martha Stewart's no show on YouTube.
Exactly. Right. And then usually the likes are in the negatives, basically.
Sorry, Martha Stewart.
It's like, for example, PewDiePie, the biggest YouTuber, didn't even make an appearance on it.
Yeah. Right.
That's crazy.
Really cherry picked.
It is very true.
I think that made me angry. Okay, continue.
but no, like...
I think the number two most disliked video on YouTube.
Wow. Yeah.
But like places like YouTube, the BBC, the videos, a lot of times the BBC will have very unpopular videos of news outlets like Vice or whatever, and what they'll do is that they'll disable their comment section, because they know that people, often before you even look at the video, it'll race straight to the comments.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, has its own host of problems. But what that app lets you do is it creates one, as opposed to just like letting it so that you
Oh, Dissenter, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I from the very beginning, when I first created the Technocrat Live website, one of the first things I did is put a Dissenter comment on it. So please feel free to go up there and put a Dissenter comments up on the Technocrat Live.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's already comments there. You'll know if you're in the right place because your little icon will light up. So yeah, I'm a big fan. It's a Web 2.5 technology. There are others, by the way. If anybody gives you a hard time and says, oh, yeah, blah, 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 there are other 2.5 technologies. Like, you can go on Amazon and have a little thing that pops up and says, oh, by the way, there's a cheaper price for this on eBay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's another example of like the 2.5 like technology.
You just peeked
over Amazon's walled garden and went, now you're ripping me off. That's my data.
I mean, the only reason why technology like this exists, for all the people who are criticizing it too unfairly, I'd say, is that you're not being told the full story often when you're going on the internet.
Right.
And
I would like it if these organizations. So okay, so you're offering a market solution without having to do anything else, that we should encourage Web 2.5 apps as a solution.
I mean, I think it might help.
Retraction.
Yeah. Might help.
Retraction problems. Yeah. The problem is that, of course, the person that posts on the Web 2.5 app, you know, could be a garbage poster and be posting garbage too.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the big problem too.
Well, the thing is, I always...
We're all garbage posters. Whee! Let's just post everything.
Well, I always detract to when eBay came around, and they wanted to create like an insurance policy about, like, because they thought that people were just going to be ripping each other off like left and right, and the thing is that they didn't. Like, you know, people had a genuine... They had a genuine concern to cooperate with each other.
They did, but it was really just one market.
Yeah. But it gives me some kind of hope. You know?
literally, the Beanie Baby market was a mania that was directly caused by the fact that nothing like eBay had ever happened.
Yeah.
So everyone, you know, like, that was eBay, internet led to eBay, led to Beanie Babies, you know. And everybody pumped their retirement into Beanie Babies, and
totally.
Then they lost it.
Yeah.
Right. You know. But yeah. I mean, you know, that doesn't I don't know where I was going with that. It must be late, right? Does anybody have a vote for law, Web 2.5, or breakups until market takes over?
I think you want to steer clear of making any kind of law that's going to govern speech online.
Right. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
But it's going to come to the point where like laws and technology are just technology is going to win every time.
Yeah.
It's just going to.
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily true. But
I think so.
It can be true.
It's okay. Also cultural. It's like people are just so afraid to make them like admit to a mistake, and like just it's okay, you know.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Right. That's false in China and true in many other places. Mm. I'll say that.
Well, rather than having them print retractions in their own publication, why not have them have the requirement be that they post retractions in competing journals?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously.
Oh, they're yeah.
Well, if I'm
if
you're Newsday on the Daily
that,
News,
though.
I have to print a retraction.
So
well,
actually,
I have to push it. I have to put it in your paper.
I just realized there's another
you have to put yours in mine.
Completely different market-based kind of Web 2.5 solution. Actually, it's a Web 2 solution, which is archive.org. Right, you know, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem is they may only have one copy, and they may, if it's a fast enough news cycle, it may miss it.
They may catch just one. Yeah.
There's a wiki for like a wiki thing or whatever for like archiving information, right? Like
so Everpedia is a version of Wikipedia that's on a blockchain and has every revision posted.
Okay.
But you know, good luck getting people to use it.
How do you make sure that people will adhere to whatever rule? Is it law? Would it be law, or would it be?
Well, I think there would have to be some. So in the case of law, where you just force them to, you know, it'd just be like if your web page ever says anything that's not in your retraction list, you've broken the law. That would be the law, you know. So in other words, if you know, New York Times 9/26/19. I'm not picking on the Times, you know. / Matt Newhall all about / you know. Change the to an and because it was a typo, it would be in the retraction list. If they didn't, it's a violation, they get fined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there would be every page, there would be a link with a retraction list, and you click on it, and it is the full list of retractions for whatever reason.
If
you know,
it's incorrect,
I'm not saying that's right, we should do that, I'm just saying that's how it would work.
If it's incorrect about you, then don't you have the right to seek compensation for it?
Yeah, we're getting into libel stuff, and that's
right.
Shaky at best, and it's a huge fight.
But in terms of requiring something of the media,
it's all civil law, and it requires money. It has to be a monetary damage.
What if freedom of the press was not extended to any organization that does not adhere to this rule?
That would probably be how the law would work, yeah. But, you know, yeah, it's a little terrifying, too. I can see how it could go wrong. I'm not saying this was a good solution.
I don't know
it was
who
an easy
about
one.
That, but...
Yeah. I mean, what about my own web pages? What if this typos, you know? I'm actually really, some of my web pages I'm really meticulous about. Some of them I'm like, whatever.
Well,
if you get into trouble, because
if you had to post a retraction, post it on a friend's site.
Right.
Someone with roughly equivalent numbers of...
Well, this is something that's solvable with any kind of peer-to-peer system that has some kind of, you know, this is a blockchain solvable problem because you got peer-to-peer plus the immutability of the blockchain itself, and you can't really revise stuff in the past without making a blight that's obviously not a legitimate blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say anything. Any opinions? You're like, I don't know.
No, I mean, I've been struggling with this. Like,
it's not easy.
It's not easy. I was thinking about laws, but I think laws are probably not the way to go with this either. I just find it extremely frustrating. Like that.
I mean, we're gonna die. I mean, democracy is gonna die.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it may not die tomorrow, but it will die eventually from this.
No. Yeah. It's
sooner
a big
or later,
problem.
Someone will find a way to exploit it even worse than it's being exploited right now.
Yeah.
And eventually, we're all gonna be marched off a cliff. You know.
Yeah, it's bad. I don't know. I've just been struggling with it this whole time that we've been talking about it. And I don't see a good answer. I really don't.
All right. Well, if anyone comes up with an answer, implement it, please. Or at least talk to other people about it.
I'll in the comments.
I'll just say that based on my observations, as technology obviously progresses endlessly into the future, what will become endlessly valuable up until we somehow transcend our consciousness in some other form is meta-narratives. Always meta-narratives. It always sort of boils down to, I've got the truth, and they got the lies. Follow me, because I am the speaker of the truth. Right. And I think that as the truth just becomes basically meaningless at this point, then people are going to value it 1,000 times more, or they're going to have to value something like anarchy, which is, I don't think they'll actually really be able to.
Eventually, we're going to need to hire Indiana Jones to figure out what's true and what's not.
You see,
have to go all the way back to the Temple of Doom.
You see, that would be interesting, like something like a... Something like some kind of dystopian future-esque kind of action-y sort of thing, like a movie gun. Like, you know, and it would be like, oh, these are the brave souls, like the underground sort of Shadowrun kind of guys who go off into these big corporations' data banks and find you the truth. Yeah. And it's
see,
just
now
like,
you're in the spirit of the Technocrat Live.
Yeah. Those chocolate chips, they're not chocolate, they're, no, dookie, you know.
All right. So poor Steve is dying. All he wants to do is go to sleep. So I've got one quick question, which is kind of fun, and actually, tell me one word to describe yourselves, and then we'll wrap it up. Give me one word to describe yourselves.
Monsters don't do it.
Oh no.
PETA.
What?
PETA.
PETA?
PETA.
Really?
Yes.
You survived that whole animal conversation? You would describe yourself as PETA?
No, pain in the ass.
Oh! Nice. He got me.
Oh, that was good. I like that. That was great.
Love it.
Yeah.
Stay spiky.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I would say just I'm a tinkerer. That's me.
Tinkerer. Nice. Yes. Nice. Awesome.
Inquisitive.
Inquisitive? Okay, that's good.
Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Master! That's two words, but alright, I'll take it. It's all right. I think probably Dungeon Master TM is one word, so as long as you're willing to be trademarked.
Okay.
Legit.
Yeah, he can do
awesome.
I would say for me, metal. That's me.
Metal.
Yes.
Sweet.
Just metal. There's one word, man. I can't do anything else. I'm trapped. What, you want to talk about yourself?
No.
You don't want to talk about yourself? He doesn't want to play. All right, everybody, thanks so much for joining us. Please join us next week. Austin will be back on, and he will be quizzing me about the why I'm so crazy, and I have all these crazy ideas about going to other planets.
Wait, so I got to write stuff for that? Or?
No. It's a test for me, not you. You can just make it up as you go along.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Cheers.